Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, June 24th, 2017. This is episode 1398. Enjoy. Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, photorealistic iPad apps, or I don't know, I'm making stuff up now. Augmented reality, 8888 Ask Leo, that's my phone number, and yeah, we're back live in studio, back from vacation, raring to go. So give me a ring, 888-827-5536, that's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside that area, you know, you could still use some sort of voice over the internet device, Skype or the like. You don't have to robocall me. Do we get? I wonder if we get robocalls at 8888 Ask Leo, and they come from 888, right? Yeah. The other couple of days ago, I got a call from a guy in my area code, not just my area code, but my exchange. You know, the first three digits of your phone number. And he said, "Did you just call me?" I said, "No." He said, "Well, I just got a call from your number." I said, "Yeah, that's spam." Remember we used to say this, and maybe you remember a few years ago, people would call, it was fairly frequent, and say, "Oh, I don't know what to do, some spammers using my email address, all my friends." And I would say, yeah, it happens to everybody because spammers use random email addresses, and don't worry, they'll move on to some other random email address. Well, now spammers are using your phone number. Nice. It's a good trick, isn't it? Because I know at first, when people started doing this a few months ago, and I got a phone number from my area code, I went, oh, it must be somebody I know. And then it got even closer. It got to be my area code, my exchange, my, you know, those first three digits. Wow. This is going to be like somebody in my neighborhood or maybe a family member whose phone number I don't recognize. I learned pretty quickly, no, it wasn't, because, you know, you pick it up and there's that dead air for a second or two. And then it goes, hi, you've just been selected. Click. Well, the guy... At least one of the guys. I have to think there's many of them. By the way, that is illegal to do that. Spoof a local area code with a marketing call. It's also illegal to make marketing calls to do not call numbers. And, of course, my phone number is in the do not call registry. I presume yours is. That helps a little bit. But a lot of these guys are overseas. They don't care what U.S. law is. Well, it turns out that for the last maybe 90 days, many of those robocalls coming from your area code were not coming from overseas, but from a guy in a Florida man. a Miami man, allegedly Miami man named, I have to say allegedly, I guess, because he's not convicted, Adrian Abramovich. He's accused of making, get this, in 3 months, 96 million illegal telemarketing robocalls. That's more than 1 million calls a day. And his particular trick, spoofing the victim's caller ID systems in order to trick people into signing up for timeshares. FCC has proposed a $120 million fine, the largest in its history, or one of the largest. Actually, I think there are larger ones, come to think of it. But they say that's it on this, you know, horrible, dangerous, illegal robocalling campaign. I don't know. Is it? Homeowners have said for years that robocallers have been trying to get them to sign up for fake free trips or vacations. They tell the victim, press 1 to hear more about exclusive vacation deals with name brand companies who had nothing to do with it. But they were, you know, Abramovich was using their names. And then if you fell for that, they'd route you to a call center where top-notch salesman would try to lure you into buying timeshares. One of the names they were using, TripAdvisor, got wind of it. They launched their own investigation. They traced the calls back to this guy, Abramovich, and his company, Marketing Strategy Leaders. out of a swanky address in a gated Coconut Grove community in Florida, Miami, Florida. They tipped off the FCC a year ago. The FCC's finally brought action. Whether they've been stopped, I don't know. But so he'd been doing it for more than 3 months, but in December, the FCC got his call records for a three-month period in which they said he did 96,758,223 calls, averaging more than a million calls a day using neighbor spoofing. Now we have a name for this. Neighbor spoofing. Now, this article I'm reading doesn't say that this guy's in jail. Doesn't say that this operation... It's from the Miami New Times. Doesn't say the calls have stopped. Just that the FCC has proposed a fine. With any luck, this will be the end of it. Do we hold out hope? This will be the end of those neighbor. It's a neighbor call. Your neighbor's calling you to sell you a timeshare. Your neighbor from a gated community in Miami is calling you. China, the Chinese government, you know, repressive totalitarian government. I mean, they're nice people. They make all our phones. But the government doesn't like the people of China to see too much of what's going on in the real world. And one of the problems, you know, they can ban websites. They can block, you know, information, news. I remember being in China a few years ago, watching CNN. All of a sudden, it just stopped. Went blank. A couple minutes later, came back. Turned out they were doing a report on something the Chinese government didn't want anybody to know about. So they just, you know, they pulled the plug. They press a button. And then when the story's over, they put it back on. CNN continues on. So it turns out they can do that. They can block websites. They can keep you off Facebook. That's blocked. They can keep you off Twitter. That's blocked. But they've been having problems with live streams. Facebook. Have you ever done Facebook Live or Periscope or Meerkat? One of them live streaming things. We do live streams of all of those shows. This show's live streamed, audio and video. It would be illegal now in China. They've shut down the entire live streaming industry. It's estimated last year that industry was worth $9 billion with a B dollars. Wow. But can't do it in China. Uh-uh. And if you've been waiting for the Galaxy Note 8, I know a lot of you... I bought a Note 7. I loved that Note 7. I bought every Note that Samsung's put out. I love that. It's a big phone. It was the first phablet. First big phone tablet, phablet. And I owned the Note 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I had to give the 7 back. Yep, because it was blowing up. Or it could have blown up. Mine never blew up. Mine was fine. Never even got hot. But anyway, I gave it back. And I bought an iPhone 7 instead, which I think probably happened a lot. Well, there's a rumor. We know Samsung has already said we're going to make it again, and we're going to make it a Note. We're not going to change the name despite, you know, the bad publicity. We're going to call it, you know, the next Note, probably the Note 8. I don't know what the number will be. They launched the last Note in September, right? Remember the week before Apple announced its iPhone, trying to, you know, steal a march on Apple? Well, rumors are they will do the same thing. They will launch the Note 8 in September. Now, this rumor says it'll cost more than $1,000. I don't know if that's true. 6.3 inches. It'll have the same screen as the S8, but bigger. It'll also be that same weird aspect ratio because it was kind of tall, right? That's how they got more screen in a size you could still palm in your hand. 835 Snapdragon or an Exynos if you're out of the country. The choice of 6 or maybe more, 6 gigs of RAM, SD card. It's about what you'd expect. This isn't much of a rumor, except the price. That's unexpected. We'll see. We'll see. Rumors. They're just rumors. 8888 Ask Leo. Heather Hammond is here. She's answering the phones. I want to take some phone calls. I missed you. It's been 2 weeks. So I'm anxious to hear from you, how you're doing, what you're up to, how you like your new phone, what you want to get instead of the old phone. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Give me a ring. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Little blondie for you. Speaking of whom, speaking of which, here's Heather Hammond. Ah! Facing the wrong way. They've turned you around, Heather.
Am I backwards?
Aren't you supposed to be facing me? You're looking over to the right now. Yeah, I don't care. You be wherever you be. You be yourself. You're going to the Identity concert tonight, right?
Identity, exactly.
Identity. No,
well, it's all weekend, and it starts pretty soon, I think, but I'm going to do Sunday.
It is a geek rock show. You're going to go to Weezer?
Yeah, Weezer and OK Go are today, and tomorrow is Animal Collective, TV on the Radio, and Girl Talk. And I've never seen any of them, and I love them all.
And they're all great groups. And OK Go is famous mostly because of their YouTube videos,
amazing,
which put them on the map. They get better and better every song. And Weezer is a geeky band. Their drummer is a big, Pat Wilson is his name, is a big geek, big tech fan. So I don't know if you knew that. And then, of course, the Nerdist is going to be there doing his podcast. And there's all sorts of geeky Comic-Con. So this is a new thing, isn't it? The geek con, you know, festival.
Yeah, I thought that this year was the first year. That's what I understand. And I have a media pass, so maybe I get to meet Chris Hardwick.
Yeah, he's cute.
Chris.
Yeah.
I know you're married, but...
He's married to a Hearst. So you got some competition there.
I'm just a common.
You know, it's funny because ID10T, which could be identity, also could be idiot in LEET. That's how you spell idiot in the geek hacker talk. IDIOT, ID10T.
Yeah, next weekend I'll have the t-shirt and you can call me idiot.
It's kind of an interesting, I mean, they know that, obviously. You know, that's kind of part of the fun. Yeah, it's interesting. Anyway, don't know what I'm talking about. Weezer was on, somebody tells me, Weezer, that's right, I remember that. Hip was on the Windows 95 CD. It had a couple of songs on it, including
cool.
Hip, whatever that song is.
Yeah, let's get Michael to play more ID10T artists,
yeah.
Maybe.
Hey, Michael will do that, our
and,
musical director.
And lots of great comics, if we didn't already mention that.
Oh, there's comedians?
Yeah, Michael Che from Weekend Update is going to be there.
Oh,
and
fun.
A girl group called Garfunkel and Oates.
Oh, I love them. Yeah. I love them.
Yeah,
not relate. No relation. ID10T is also, if you ever heard that number before, what IT guys will say if they want to insult you covertly. They'll say, "Oh yeah, you've got the ID10T error. I know that one."
It's your fault.
Yes, you're an idiot. Just in case, if you've ever heard anybody be called that, that's what that's all about. So you've been lining up calls, despite the fact that you have your festive party mood on. Who should I talk to first?
Well, I've been partying with Julie in Moore Park. She wants to amplify some sound for an event she's having.
Get it louder! All right, thank you, Heather Hammond. It's good to see you again. Hello, Judy. How are you? Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. It's Julie.
Julie, I'm sorry. Thank you for correcting me.
No problem. So I started a Canine Sense Sport organization.
Hold on. What is that?
It is a brand new sport that is modeled after bomb-sniffing dogs and drug-sniffing dogs.
Oh, neat. So you say, is this a banana? And he goes, woof, like that?
No, actually, we actually hide a specific odor, and it's a timed event, and the dogs go and they find it, and it's actually a lot of fun. And any kind of dog can do this, any age, any breed, mixed breed, handicapped dogs, everything. So
what a great idea.
For the handlers and for the dogs. So we have these trials nationwide, and I need to find a affordable way for the affiliates that are hosting the trials to amplify the national anthem, because that's what we start each trial with, is a national anthem. And I haven't found anything that works well yet.
So, okay, I'm trying to think of, okay, so the source of the national anthem is a cassette recorder? What is the source?
It's actually somebody's phone. So either iPhone.
Oh, Lord. Okay, somebody's phone. So what you and how big an area do you need to amplify it?
There's usually about 50 to 75 people at each trial.
And it's outdoors, I'm sure.
Most of the time it's outdoors. Sometimes it's indoors, but most of the time it's outdoors.
So outdoors is a particular challenge because, you know, in a room, you've got walls to bounce the sound, and you can get much bigger sound in a room outdoors. In fact, this is one of the reasons, you know, outdoor concerts, sound is often terrible, and they have to have giant speakers. Now, you're not filling a stadium, though, so might not be too hard. So one easy way to do this, but probably outside your budget, is to go to, you know, any of the audio people. Like McCune or whatever, and get what's called a public address or PA system. Do you have one anyway? You must have a microphone to talk to people with a speaker.
Well, actually, no, we just have loud voices.
Okay. Well, all right. If a loud voice is enough, then here's what I'd recommend is a Bluetooth speaker. You can, you know, truthfully, you can plug any powered speaker into the headphone jack of a phone. The nice thing about Bluetooth is most of them are battery-powered, so you don't have to plug it in. You just carry it with you. A lot of them are small, and some of them have very loud sound. I use one called the Fugu when I travel, Fogo. And it's actually surprisingly loud, given that it's small enough to carry in my pocket. But I'm going to tell you there are louder Bluetooth speakers out there. If you want to really get some real power and real sound... you can get loud as long as, let's put it this way, if you don't mind carrying something a little heavier, generally speaking, size means louder and better sound. So Bose makes an excellent set. And so here's the thing that you could use this for yourself during in between competitions. Do you care if the sound quality is like high fidelity or...
No, I think we just need to have the gist of the national anthem.
Yeah.
So we're not.
I'd look at any Bluetooth speaker on Amazon. You know, for $33, you can get something called the DOSS. This is cheap. DOSS Soundbox Plus. It's pretty loud, and it's pretty cheap. And you'll have to pair it to the phone that's got the national anthem on it.
Okay.
But if it's your phone, that's not a big deal. I like my Bose SoundLink, too. I use that. The Fugu sounds pretty good, but I don't know about how loud it is. Let me see what the loudest... you want it's really loud, huh? I wonder what the loudest... These are small enough to fit in your pocket or a briefcase. And I think they'd be loud enough for 50 people. They know the national anthem. They don't have to hear every note.
No, it's just the feel of it all.
Yeah.
You don't want everyone to...
You can use it for a PA system, too, which is nice. You could, you know... Sure. Where is the next event? I want to go.
Our next event is in Simi next weekend. It's June 30th and July 1st at Center Point Church in Simi Valley. And can I give a shout-out to the company name?
Yeah.
It's uscaninesentsports.com.
uscaninesentsports.com. It smells good. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That sounds so cool. Now, somebody's saying the Apple HomePod, but that won't be out till December. There are speaker systems like the HomePod will do this that you can pair them, and you can have more of them, so you could play several around the event. That music means but one thing. It's time for Scott Wilkinson, our home theater geek. Thank you, Scott, for filling in for me last week. I appreciate it. Oh, let me turn.
Fine.
Yeah. You sat on the ball, I'm told.
I did. I sat on the ball. I always do.
Jason,
I want the
Snell
full
wouldn't.
Leo experience.
Jason said he wanted a chair. Thank you for... people probably don't know, but I sit on one of these yoga balls during the show just to keep me from getting sleepy.
It actually works.
Oh, it does, because if you're not constantly alert, you'll fall off. Just roll right off.
Yeah, exactly.
So before the break, we were talking to a woman who had a very interesting challenge. She wanted a portable, I think Bluetooth is the best way to do this, but a portable speaker. She could play at an event with dogs and play the national anthem to begin the event, which I think is a nice touch.
Sure.
And I set up, you know, what you want probably is one of them Bluetooth speakers, but you need one, you know, if it's fair, it's outside, you want to make it loud. You said you found one that was particularly loud.
Well, I went and I looked up, you know, as I was waiting to come on here, I went and Googled, you know, loudest Bluetooth speakers. And I came up with a list from a website called BassHeadSpeakers.com with the top 10 loudest Bluetooth speakers of 2017. And number one is VavaVoom.
Oh, that's pretty good because that's pretty portable, actually.
Looks like it to me.
Yeah. And that's a good sounding speaker, too.
I have never heard it.
Problem with loud is you can have loud, but then, as you know, I don't have to tell you, they can get distorted.
Yes, exactly right. And you don't want that.
You don't want that.
Now, I thought your idea, you mentioned something on your answer that I thought was really good, which was to place several of them around the crowd. It's not that big a crowd, 50, 75 people, right?
Yeah.
So you put several of them around. They don't need, none of them then has to be all that loud.
Yeah, this is,
of course, it's more expensive.
There's been around for a while. Yeah, you have to buy extra speakers. A number of Bluetooth speakers say you can pair them together. It's one way to get stereo because a single speaker, of course, even if it has multiple tweeters and they try to do stereo, it's not going to have any stereo separation. So
with one exception I'll tell you about in a second.
Okay. But this is what Apple, and I thought this was very interesting. Apple announced, you know, this new HomePod. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've paid any attention to this. This was in their event on June 5th, and it won't be out till the end of the year. So there's, you know, all we can do is report what Apple is saying.
Yeah, exactly.
But the idea, it's fairly small. It is Bluetooth. Well, maybe not. It's not portable. I don't think it's battery powered. You have to
plug
it in.
Well, and isn't it more like an Echo, or it's kind of like a
voice interface? Well, I think that's what's deceptive. It's not. It does have a voice interface to Apple's Siri. But Apple's really pitching this as a speaker system more than anything else. And it's priced at a speaker system point. It's $350.
Oh, yeah.
So it's, and, you know, you can get an Echo Dot for $40 and put that on some speakers and you're good to go. But people who heard it, and it's a small number, but people who heard it at the Apple event said it sounded surprisingly good, even compared to the high-priced Sonos speakers, which are also in that range.
Yeah.
But here's what's interesting, and the reason I bring it up, Apple says you can use as many as you want in a room. And because it has a microphone in it, they will tune to the shape and of your room. So, of course, one is not going to be stereo. Two could be stereo. But if you could place five in there.
And you could make a five-channel surround
sound.
Well,
I don't think they're claiming, and we'll have to wait till it comes out, that it will decode Dolby 5.1 sound or anything.
Right.
But they say it's intelligent enough to spread the music around in a way that takes advantage of the room's acoustics and the shape of the speaker, et cetera. So that's kind of intriguing.
It is intriguing. I definitely will keep my eye out for that. I also wanted to mention in last week's podcast that I did, I talked with a guy from Riva Audio. And they make some Bluetooth speakers, but they make some really good ones. And in particular, I'm thinking of the one called the Arena. They're getting into the multi-room speaker business like Sonos, Denon, Yamaha. A bunch of companies have these products. Theirs are based on Google Cast. So it's a much broader range of apps that are available and so on. Plus, they say, and I've actually heard it and it works, out of a single speaker, they have a technology called they call it Trillium, that actually gives you a fairly nice stereo sound field from a single speaker.
And how do they do that?
Well, they do it with a combination of DSP and mostly DSP, I think. They have
so they're using computer software to kind of
shape
the sound.
And they basically have three sets of drivers, one pointing forward and one pointing to each side. And so they analyze the music and they say, okay, if something is exactly the same in the right and left channels, we'll put it in the middle speaker. And if it's not exactly the same, the L minus R and L plus R, we'll put those in the side speakers. And it works. It works. It's amazing, actually.
So your experience with these, because this isn't the first company to claim that, hey, we can with one speaker simulate stereo.
I've never
been very impressed with those
simulations. I haven't either. I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you. And yet this is not bad at all. This is better than I've heard for the most part. Yes, exactly.
Wow. Very interesting.
And
RIVA?
RIVA, rivaaudio.com is their website. And you can also, you know, have, it's a multi-room system, and that's really what what you want if you want to put a bunch of them around this group of people. And I think the arena is, I think, $250, so it's a little less.
Yeah, Sonos's are very expensive.
But if you want to get the battery to go with it, that's another $100. Yeah. So then, boom, you're back up to $350.
I'm all in on Sonos. And like a lot of people, I did it incrementally. You know, you buy your first Sonos, and that seems, yeah. It's expensive, but I can handle that. And then your second and third. By the time you got to your eighth Sonos, you spent a rather large sum of money.
You have.
Yeah.
Now, Sonos is great. I'm not knocking them in any way.
I wonder what their future is, because I think they're getting to see a lot of competition.
Well,
and they don't do any of the Echo or Siri stuff. They don't do any voice recognition. They promised Echo support, but haven't delivered.
Really?
Yeah, okay, they promised that at the end of early this year. And it's a nice little company. It's out of Santa Barbara. I like Sonos a lot, but
I do too.
I really wonder if they're going to survive when companies like Apple move into their space.
Apple's the 800-pound gorilla in the room.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I thought it was a very interesting call. There are a couple others here that I haven't heard of. Well, Cambridge Soundworks.
I like them. They're owned by Logitech now, though. They're not the same.
Oh,
Cambridge.
Okay, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, Logitech bought them a few years ago, actually.
Okay,
but,
well, there's one. There's called the Ont Z Angle 3XL. So that's, and they say that's pretty loud.
It's not hard to remember. Wow.
There's the Shark Boombox.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't heard that one either. Yeah. Anker, A-N-K-E-R.
They make good stuff, but that's usually relabeled, I would guess, Taiwanese or Chinese kind of.
And G-Project. I've actually used some G-Project products, the G-Boom wireless Bluetooth boombox speaker. I agree, you need something pretty loud, especially outdoors. If this dog thing is mostly outdoors, then you need something with some punch behind it. Yep.
You need some oomph.
You need some oomph. Exactly so.
Yeah. So, okay. Anything else in the world? We got about a minute left. Scott, of course, editor-in-chief of the AVS Forum. He's got his finger on the pulse of home theater. Anything else going on in the...
Tons of stuff always. I got a letter recently from a guy saying, which TV should I get, the LG OLED, the Sony OLED, or the Sony Z9 LED, which is the best LED LCD TV on the market?
And don't be fooled by the Samsung QLED, which is not an OLED. It's just a QLED.
I know.
What is the best?
He really likes 3D, and of those three, the only one that does 3D anymore is the Z9 LED LCD TV.
He's one of those old, it's going to be like the old timers say, I really want a fax machine. You got one of them? Scott Wilkinson, his Home Theater Geeks podcast is a must listen, even though I must admit it's on my network, so I'm a little biased. twit.tv/HTG. Scott, we'll see you next week. Thanks, and again, thanks for filling in. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Scott appreciates how hard it is to hit those network exits now. He knows. But we made it. We did it. Thank you, Scotty.
My pleasure. You know what? I got to tell you that countdown timer that you have.
That helps, doesn't it?
Oh, man. That helps tremendous.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. I did that out of desperation, frankly.
Because you lose track of time.
Yeah,
you're talking
it's
with people and
do.
You're coming up with ideas and stuff, and then all of a sudden you hear the music and you're halfway through a sentence.
Yeah, it's really hard.
Yeah.
You want to stick around?
I'm happy to.
Answer some questions?
Sure.
It's all yours. There's the magic timer you referred
to. There's the magic timer. Yay! I will say that right after I'll stick around for the top of the hour, but then I'm heading to see the Book of Mormon.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I'll be interested in what you think.
Yeah, I can't wait. It's going to be great. It's at the Pantages in Hollywood.
Have you seen it before?
No.
Oh, good. Well, you think
actually, some friends of mine couldn't make it, and they gave me their tickets.
Nice.
I'm going.
At the Pantages. That's a neat old theater.
Yeah, 2,700 seats, something like that. It's a big theater.
It's big. Yeah, we have its big brother up here. The Orpheum, I think, is the Pantages.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Man, oh, man, it was hot. When I was there last
week. Yeah, I'm sorry. You got the 106 degree temperature.
Man,
sorry.
It was
but it's air conditioning
it was
here. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't a problem. Yeah. In fact, I like hot weather. I was born and raised in L.A., So I know from hot weather, and I like it. It's as so long as funny. It's dry.
Because we're on the equator. We're in the tropics, and we're seeing the temperature. It's like much cooler in the tropics than it was up here.
Did you hear in Phoenix, it was last weekend, it was 120 degrees. They had to cancel flights because they couldn't take off.
Yeah, terrible,
unbelievable.
Right?
Yeah. Ooh, Mike B. saw Book of Mormon on Broadway about 1.5 years ago. And Dr. Mom thinks I'll love it, too. Yes, Dr. Mom, I just learned, just recently, I hadn't known this, that musical is written by the guys who do South Park. And I don't like South Park. Now, I don't think this musical is going to be South Park. I mean, I'm sure it'll have a similar sort of acerbic sense of humor and what have you, and that's fine. But I'm really looking forward to it. Let's see. User 86632. What's the best wide viewing angle TV? Non OLED. Well, that answers that question. OLED is the best wide viewing angle TV, no question. But your Samsung has very bad off-axis viewing. Unfortunately, this is the one thing that LCD TVs can't really do very well. They've implemented local dimming to get better contrast. They've done a lot of things that are, I consider, sort of band-aids, but off-axis performance is not one that can really be helped, other than whether or not there's two different types of LCD panels. One is called VA, vertically aligned. The other is called IPS, in-plane switching. And of the two, most companies use VA, or vertical aligned, because it gets better blacks. But it has worse off-angle performance. Now, Samsung uses VA. Sony won't tell us what they use, but we're pretty sure it's VA. The only company that uses IPS that I know about is LG. If you're really wanting wide off-axis, good off-axis performance and in an LCD TV, not an OLED, You want to find one that uses an IPS panel. The black levels aren't going to be as good, but it's going to have wider viewing angle. Still not perfect off-axis, but probably better than what you're getting now.
Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. If you want to talk high tech, I'm here to do it with you. Let's see who's next. Art on the line from Yucca Valley, California. Thanks for hanging on. Hi, Art.
Hi, Leo. Long-time listener.
Thank
Good
you.
To talk to you.
Thank you.
I on my desktop, I have Windows 7 Pro, and I use Office 365 online. And I can't get it to sync my calendar or tasks or contacts onto my iPad or iPhone.
Do you log in on your Windows 7 with a Microsoft account, or do you log in with a local account?
I don't quite.
So Microsoft's new thing, and actually I guess they started it with Windows 8, so I can answer my own question. But their new thing with Windows 8 and Windows 10 is they want you to use your Microsoft account, because at that point you hook up everything, calendar, contacts, Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff, OneDrive, so that when you log into your computer, it's all kind of set, and you get a new computer, it's set. On Windows 7, it was like the old days of Windows. Feels like the old days now. You create just an account, right? And you create a password. It's not necessarily hooked up to your Windows, to your Microsoft account. So that means you have to manually hook up your calendar. I'll tell you the easiest way. Some people resist this because it's Google, but the easiest way, in my opinion, is to sync your address book on Windows and your calendar on Windows with Google's address book and calendar. You do that by adding a Google account to those apps, and then on the iPad, it's very easy to add that Google account to your iPad, and it will automatically synchronize. It gives you the choice, even mail if you want. But mail, calendar, contacts, I think notes, tasks, a few other things to your Google account. So Google becomes the middleman. And the reason you want to use Google is because you need somewhere in the cloud to store this. Remember the old days of syncing? You'd take your Palm Pilot, put it in a dock, connect the dock to your computer, press a button, and the computer and the palm would sync one to one, peer, what we call peer to peer. But nowadays, you really use a middle person. I'll be politically correct, a middle person to upload it in the cloud. And that way it has another advantage, because if you lose anything or if you want get a new phone, it's very easy to just to hook them up to your Google account, download all the contacts, download the address book. The other Microsoft-y way is to use Outlook, but that requires then some sort of Outlook interchange system. Again, a cloud system is you know, so that your iPad
can... iCloud, can't that sync with... Office 365, or just...
You know, that's a good question. You can't... let me look at the... The issue is going to be the Apple side of all of this, because...
Yeah, I... just to help everyone out, I found a program called Code2, T-O-O, and it was free, and they said they could sync Office 365 with iCloud, and then if it synced with iCloud... Then my calendar, tasks,
yeah.
Contacts.
Yeah.
Would,
so you're using, instead of Google, you're using Apple's solution, but you're also using this third-party solution. So there is an iCloud client for Apple's iCloud client for Windows. I don't usually install that. You know, Apple offers that. And I imagine that would do the same thing. That's also free.
Right. And I did call up... Office 365 a few months ago, and they said that they used to be able to do it, but they turned off one of the servers that did that feature.
Yeah, that's the standards are shifting. That's why I still use Google, and I really recommend sticking with Google as a third party way of doing it rather than iCloud, because iCloud is Apple proprietary. So it works great as long as you stay in the Apple ecosystem. And you see with Windows, you have to now get this third-party tool or use Apple's kind of not so good, frankly, tool for iCloud. I think if you just stick with Google, everything works so much easier. And the good news is Windows 7 is the last one that doesn't use your Microsoft Services account. From now on, Microsoft kind of handles this all for you when you log in to Windows. That seems to be the easiest way to do it. Yeah, I guess you can do it with iCloud. I prefer Google. You know, maybe this is just personal. I prefer Google's cloud services to iCloud, to Apple's cloud services. Apple's not super adept at cloud yet, which is funny because they've said several times this is going to be the next big business for them is cloud services, and they're all excited about cloud services, but they seem to have the devil of a time. And again, part of this comes from Apple's mindset, which is we want you to do everything with Apple products. We don't want you using Windows. We want you using Mac. You wouldn't have this problem if you had a Mac and an iPad and an iPhone. Wouldn't life be easier if you were just all Apple, says Apple? And that's why I think even their iCloud program for Windows, you know, makes me a little bit nervous. Stick with Google. I guess that's really my bottom line. Susan, Tehachapi, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Susan.
Hi, how are you, Leo?
I am well. How are you?
Yeah, I really enjoy your program.
Thank you.
Listen, I bought a flip phone to replace one that died, a Samsung, and I've taken a lot of pictures, and I have it through Sprint, but they can't seem to find a way to take my pictures and put them on my computer to save them.
Yeah, flip phones were never really designed to... what you want to do really is all about smartphones. I mean, we've had camera phones for a decade or more.
Right.
I remember getting my first camera phone. It was a flip phone. It was from Sprint, as a matter of fact, Motorola flip phone. But that was 2001. And you could upload pictures, but you didn't have any easy way to get them on your computer. So you've been going to the Sprint store, or have you been calling Sprint? Is that how you've been?
I've gone there about four or five
times. Here's what,
I can't seem to
So in my experience, going to the company store, the store owned by AT&T, Sprint, Verizon, T-Mobile, isn't as good as going to a nice little third-party store with a smart guy behind the counter who sells a variety of service plans with a variety of carriers. Those guys can help you because they have a device in most cases, work with most phones, they connect it to the device and it gets your data off the phone, puts it on a card that you can then put in your computer. So the Sprint stores, the company stores tend not to want to do that. They don't have things like that. But the reason these third-party stores do, they want to move you onto their plan, right? And so they want to make that as easy as possible. So if that's – there are ways to do this if you're super geeky. I've done it. There's – and it's terrible software. There's third-party software out there that's written by – you know, it's janky. It's written by somebody who's not a great user interface designer, probably a really geeky, smart guy who never spent much time on making it work well. But it works. And you can copy the stuff off and blah, blah, blah. But it's a real pain. And it, even for me, it was tricky. And in order to do that, of course, then you have to have that cable that fits your phone, which is a special proprietary cable. Your best bet in the future, get a smartphone, because they all do this. In the meanwhile, find a good third-party phone store. You know, the little hole-in-the-wall shop. And ask, say, I'll pay you $20 to give me a SD card with my computer's pictures, my phone's pictures. And he'll do that for you. 8888, he'll have the cable too. See, that's why you want to go to him. He has that special little box. Sucks all the data. 8888, ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. I'll be back.
Okay, take it easy.
492 seconds.
Take a bio break, whatever you need.
Thanks, Scott.
So user 7336 is asking, are last year's top-end TVs still worth buying? Concerned as to whether standards are settled, et cetera, particularly HDR. And I wrote back something, but I actually sort of didn't notice that he said top-end TVs. And I think what he's probably doing is asking about last year, 2016, top-end TVs versus 2017, say, mid-tier TVs. And the question of whether or not HDR standards are settled, they aren't 100%, but they're getting there. In particular, we have two main standards. There are four, actually, that are out in the market, two of which are mostly out there, and the other two aren't yet. HDR10, which is an open standard. Anybody can use it for free. Or Dolby Vision, which is from Dolby, and it's proprietary, and it costs a licensing fee. So everybody who's done HDR has done HDR10, and that is the required HDR format for Ultra HD Blu-ray. But more and more people are starting to use Dolby Vision. We're starting to see it. We have seen it now for a while from streaming apps like Netflix, Vudu, and Amazon. And there's a growing number of titles in Dolby Vision. We're now starting to see it in UHD Blu-rays. The first two have come out. Might not be the best titles in the world, although they're pretty good. Despicable Me and Despicable Me 2 have been released on Ultra HD Blu-ray with Dolby Vision, high dynamic range. And the question is, which one's better, or are they the same? My answer is Dolby Vision is better. And the reason is Dolby Vision encodes information called metadata about the peak brightness and the average brightness of a scene, of each scene, even down to each individual frame, whereas HDR10 only encodes that piece of information, what's the brightest and what's the average brightness for the entire program, be it a movie or a TV show or whatever. And having what's called dynamic metadata, as Dolby Vision does, really gives a better picture than what's called static metadata, which is what HDR10 does. Now, Samsung recently introduced something called HDR10 Plus, which is, in fact, dynamic metadata for HDR10. So instead of just one piece of information saying, this is the brightest thing that's in this whole movie, and here's the average brightness of the whole movie, they can say, here's the peak and average brightness of each scene, or I guess each individual frame. I don't know much about it yet, but I am learning. So that's something that's coming. And it's presumably an open standard. So it should be free to implement. Samsung's kind of leading the charge, I think, because they're the only major company that has not thrown any support behind Dolby Vision. Sony now does. LG has for a couple of years. TCL does. So there are quite a few companies now that have Dolby Vision capable TVs. We now have some Dolby Vision capable Ultra HD Blu-ray players, the Oppo, the Philips, the LG. The Philips and the LG haven't gotten their firmware updates yet to enable Dolby Vision, but the Oppo has. So I'm just now starting, as of this week, to look at Dolby Vision content from UHD Blu-ray. Pardon me. And I only have two movies to look at, but there'll be more. There's another one coming out, Resident Evil, which I won't look at because I have no interest in that whatsoever. There's another one that I can't recall off the top of my head. But in any event, yes, it's not settled yet. You're correct. But it's pretty good. And certainly if you're talking about Dolby and HDR10, regular HDR10, that's totally settled. So then we get to the question of the top TV from 2016 or a mid-range TV from 2017. That's a harder question. That you need to sort of look at on a case-by-case basis. For example, I think that the 2017 LG OLEDs are quite a bit better. Some people disagree with me, but I say they're quite a bit better than the 2016 models. And so I definitely recommend getting a 2017. Now, the one thing that some people are complaining about, and rightly so if you're into it, is that the 2017s don't have 3D and the 2016s do. So, you know, how important is 3D? There are people, I get letters and emails from people all the time that say, I've got, you know, dozens of 3D Blu-rays. And if I buy a new TV that doesn't have 3D, and most 2017 TVs don't have 3D, then what am I going to do? Well, you're going to be out of luck. That's what you're going to do. You're not going to be able to see 3D. The only one that I was going to talk about, possibly this reader question about, you know, should I get the LG OLED, the Sony OLED, or the Sony Z9D? And I love 3D, and I got a bunch of 3D Blu-rays. And the answer is, if you really want to keep 3D, the Z9D is the only one of those that still has 3D. The Sony OLED does not. So, you know, that depends on kind of what your feature set is that you're particularly interested in. he did a follow-up question, which was something about, should I get a 2016 top-of-the-line Samsung with quantum dots or a middle-of-the-line 2017 Samsung? Well, Samsung typically does edge lighting, which is not my favorite. In 2017, they have no TVs that are backlit with full-array local dimming or FALD. Last year, 2016, they had one or two. Their flagship from 2016, I believe it's the KS9800. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. I'm not 100% sure on that model number. But in any event, that top-of-the-line one did have quantum dots, and it did have full-array local dimming. And that's a marvelous TV. I think it's curved, though, which I'm not a fan of. But you may be. So that's more of a case-by-case basis. But I'd say 2017, generally, all the companies have made improvements. And so I would be looking at 2017s, unless 3D were critical. And if 3D is critical, then you've got to look at 2016 or earlier. And I don't know, you probably still can't get any 2015s unless you get them used or buy it from somebody or whatever.
Thank you, Scott.
Anyway, all right,
have
see you later.
Have a good one.
Thanks. Bye.
Enjoy the show.
I shall.
Well, hey. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk tech. Computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, I guess dumb phones too, flip phones. 8888 Ask Leo. Don't usually know much about flip phones, but if you want to call, I'll do my best. 888-827-5536. The smartphone revolution began, you could say it began more than 10 years ago with the BlackBerry and the Scion. There was even a Palm visor that had a phone module in it. But really, it was in 2007 when Apple came out with the iPhone, 10 years ago in June, that the smartphone revolution really took off. And it isn't about phones, ironically. It's really a computer in your pocket. In fact, I think the last stats I saw said people use the cameras more than they use the phone. So you could call it a smart camera. I think it's a computer in your pocket. It's what it really is. It's a communications device. It's an internet device. It's definitely a camera. In fact, I just came back from vacation. I decided to bring my best camera, which is a pretty heavy Canon 5D with three lenses. You know, it's probably 20 pounds of gear. And I get up at 5 in the morning to see the sunrise over the Inca ruins of Machu Picchu in Peru, because that's legendary to see the sun come up over it. And we were lucky. We had a clear day, which is not unusual, not typical. And I took all these pictures with a variety of lenses and my camera, and I had a 360-degree video and all this stuff. And then my dumb camera phone, my Google Pixel phone, I snap one shot. It's the best shot of the bunch, easily, with my camera phone. See, it makes you really wonder, why bring all that gear? Maybe I should just, I'll tell you why. Because the camera phone, you can't really zoom, right? It's a slightly wide angle. Usually they're typically about, for photographers will know what this means, 28 millimeter, slightly wide angle lens. And then, of course, on the Apple iPhone 7 Plus, you get two lenses. One's 50 millimeters, one's 28 millimeters. And then there's some other cameras that have even, you know, more, but they're not zoom lenses. So if you want to take nature pictures or pictures of distant objects, you probably need a professional camera, or at least a point and shoot with a lot of zoom. But I have to say, the camera phones, you know why they do such a good job? Because they're computers. Because you have not such a great lens. I mean, frankly, no camera phone has a very good lens. There's small sensors, and how can you put a good lens in a package small enough to fit in a phone? You can't. But what they have behind it is powerful processors and software that's become fairly sophisticated at taking the data it's getting from this limited sensor and turning it into a gorgeous picture. Right? It kind of hurts me a little bit when somebody says, "Well, I have this flip phone, and I have all these pictures." Oh, can you get next time? Get a camera phone, and certainly, if you want, I can give you advice on, you know, which ones have the best cameras. It, you know, the big three right now are the Google Pixel and the Pixel XL. That's the Google Android phone, Apple's iPhone 7 and 7 Plus, and I think you'd have to include Samsung's Galaxy S8 as well in that bunch. Those are the big three. And there are many other very good camera phones out there that'll give you images as good as a point-and-shoot camera, just without the zoom, without all the controls. Just killed me, though, after lugging all that heavy equipment around and a tripod. You know why I took it? For Instagram. It's on a computer. I just take it and take it. 8888 Ask Leo. Mike in San Diego. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo. Hey, I've got a fully functioning iPad Air 2, and I purchased a new iPad Pro. So I'm trying to restore the backup from the Air 2 to the new iPad Pro.
Yeah, that's what I do every time I get a new iPad. I back up the old one and restore it.
Doesn't work. I don't get error messages, but it fails at various points during like the sync process.
So in the backup, it when you connect it to the computer, you're using iTunes, or are you doing it via iCloud?
I've tried both.
Okay, so you connect it to the computer, and it seems to back up normally on iTunes.
The Air 2 backs up normally.
Okay.
Yes.
And so we think we have a good backup file. It might be because of the disparate versions of iOS. What version of iOS do you have on the...
We've checked that. Both are on 10.3.
Oh, so they're both on the on the latest?
Yes.
Hmm.
So I've been working with various tech support at Apple, and the latest theory they have, they say, is the backup is corrupt.
And yeah, but you're making new ones. You've made several, right?
Correct.
They're not all corrupt.
He says what his theory is, the software is actually corrupt on the iPad Air itself. He said, so you can make backups all day long. They're all corrupt.
Well, that's actually a reasonable theory. If there's something wrong on the iPad, the old iPad, somehow magically, you know, it's, and that could be that it's not backing up properly. And so when you restore it, what happens during the restore process? Tell me a little bit about that.
There's six steps before you get to the downloading the apps and the music.
Yeah.
And it usually gets to the end of step six.
Oh, so close.
Yes. Now, when I do it from the cloud, it seems to restore. But then as it's starting up, it fails. It doesn't get backed. It doesn't make it past the white screens where it's applying changes. Now, my frustration with Apple about this is,
Something that I don't know if Apple, let me know if Apple suggested this. This is the one thing I would try. And this is a little risky, but if your older iPad is corrupt, it's corrupt. Nothing you can do about it. Back up the older iPad and restore it from that backup. In other words, back up the older iPad, wipe it, then restore the backup to the older iPad. Do you see what I'm saying? Does that make any sense?
Take the old one, back it up, and then try a restore.
And then wipe it and restore from that backup. Now, if that fails, then Apple's theory is right, and, you know, you're out of luck. So, but if it doesn't fail, then what you might do by doing that is refresh this older iPad and make it usable, and then you can back it up one more time and restore it to the new iPad.
Okay, because I'm really not concerned so much about the old one. Is I just wanted to get the new one set up.
Yeah, I understand. And if there's any data on the old one that you really care about, make sure you get that, you know, squirreled away somewhere, because you're going to wipe that older iPad if you do this.
And so that was one of the points of my call, is if this doesn't work, I'll try your suggestion, but if it doesn't work, it means your backups in a situation like this are worthless.
That's right. Because you're backing up damaged data. Although, that's not strictly true. They're worthless for the purpose you want. However, there probably is data in there that you can use, like your pictures and documents and so forth. So it isn't completely useless.
Well, the documents inside apps, according to Apple, what I would have to do is, one of his suggestions was emailing them to myself. But another one is maybe I can move some of those to the cloud, since this is still functioning.
Well, I'm just going to tell you, Apple won't tell you this because it's a third-party tool, but there are tools like iExplorer that will let you look into that backup and get the data out of it.
Okay.
So what I'm saying is, before you do anything else, look into the old backup. Make sure all your files are out of there. And you're right. You can email them. That's the Apple way. but then I think wiping the iPad and restoring, maybe that might do the trick. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Thank you.
Yeah, I hope that helps. It's just a thought. Yeah. So your problem, you were about to say, we're now in the break, so I can talk more.
Sure.
You were about to say the problem with Apple was?
Was that all the settings, that I risk losing all the settings, and I risk losing all the documents and anything in the app.
Yeah, that's why before you wipe your iPad, you really want to make sure you have all that data somehow.
And so all that stuff, you know, it's going to have to, you know, I was not aware of this iExplorer. And I can certainly hook up a USB cable and pull the photos off.
Yeah, but there's, with iTunes, when you sync with iTunes, in many cases, you can get documents from those apps by doing that as well. if there are compatible applications on the desktop. You know, for instance, if there's Pages documents that you have in on the iPad, you can then get those during the sync process. You'll see, if you look in your applications, you'll see all the documents on your desktop, all the documents associated, and you can get those.
So going forward, my thought is, with this new one, if I don't have the file somewhere where I can get to, such as like on the, you know, the web version of Pages on my PC, if I can get to those and I can get to stuff on the cloud, that's fine. But I'm going to be more careful in the future with any apps that hold the data internally.
You're making an excellent point, which is, if you can't trust the backup, then what can you do? But what you've described, I think, is fairly rare. I've never had a problem with a backup.
Okay, that was going to
be. Yeah, I think that's fairly rare. But you're right. I mean, this is one of the problems I have in general with the iPad, is it's not really a computing device in the way many of us understand, because things like backup, you really have to do it Apple's way. And if that doesn't work, you're kind of out of luck.
In the course of doing one of the restores, it showed an old email address for this same Apple account. Have you ever encountered that?
No, that's interesting.
Okay. They're telling me that, well, just use if it's for the same account, just use your regular password and it'll work, and it doesn't work.
Oh, that's really interesting.
And they're telling
me... another thing you might try, are you backing it up to a Mac or a PC?
PC.
I'm not sure, but you can do some research where those restore files, those backup files are stored, but they are discrete files that you can delete. You might want to get rid of those old ones just to make sure that they're not somehow getting involved in the process. I don't know. My gut tells me that to do this in as clean an environment as possible. So get rid of old backups. Make sure both systems are exactly the same. It's weird that you're seeing that. That bothers me. You're seeing the old address. You shouldn't be.
It's part of me is wondering, is it truly corrupt, or have they messed up something with my account?
Well, that's possible, and that does happen, by the way.
And so far, no one's got to the bottom of it.
Yeah, and this is where Apple, as good as their support is, and they're very helpful, you know, they're very nice, but they will never admit a mistake in Apple's design.
No.
And sometimes the right answer is, oh, well, we didn't do that right.
yeah, they go silent because I've repeated the.
You could tell. Yeah,
I've
you could tell.
Something you've said. Yeah. Hey, are you going to rewrite this iTunes? And they go silent.
Yeah, so it's politically, you know, they're very political. So that I think hurts them a little bit, because they'll never admit a wrongdoing. Good luck. I got to run. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Let me know if it works, though. I'd love to hear. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. Sometimes good tech support involves some intuition. And it's not, you know, as is often the case, intuition isn't magic. Intuition is the result of a lot of experience and just kind of a maybe almost unconscious understanding of the kinds of things that can go wrong with computers. So this is a purely gut reaction to the last call, which is, well, why don't you try doing a backup, then restoring from the backup, doing a backup, wiping the drive. The reason is that might, by wiping the old iPad, restore the file system. If you've got a corrupt file system, you want to start over. So back it up. This often works within other contexts. Back it up, format, and reinstall. And you hope that the backup is okay. And it's just the file system that's messed up. 88, what do you think? I always welcome your input, your thoughts. And there's a couple of ways you can do that. Of course, you can call 8888 Ask Leo. We have a great chat room. It's always on. They're in there chatting as we speak. In fact, they have always, with every call, lots of good ideas. That's IR. You can go in there without a chat client. That's irc.twit.tv. IRC is the old Internet Relay Chat. And if you have an IRC client, that's the best way. But you can also do it on the web. irc.twit.tv. Twit's my podcast network. And you can also go to the website. And everything that I just said is there as well. So maybe I should just have started with the website. TechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. And what we do is we put every show there, all the questions, all the answers. James DeRubo's typing as I talk. Type. We also then, and we divide it into show, hour, question. Put all the links in it. When I mention something like iExplorer, which is at macroplant.com, when I mention that, we put a link there so you don't have to remember or write anything down. And then even after the show, we put audio and video from the show there. So you can watch a question and all of that. And most importantly, that's another feedback place for you because you can add your comments. TechGuyLabs.com. And I do not charge for this. This is free. There's no sign up. We do ask you to sign up using your Facebook or Twitter or Google account if you're going to leave comments. And that's just to keep the spam out. TechGuyLabs.com. I don't collect your address. I don't want your address. What am I going to do with that? Lynn Torrance, you're next. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo.
Hi, Lynn.
I was wondering if you could tell me, I have a laptop computer connected to my stereo where I stream music.
Nice.
And it's time to buy a new one. So I was wondering if you could tell me what Intel or AMD processor would be best for streaming music in a laptop.
Let me ask you how you hook it up. Do you have a wire going from the headphone jack or?
Yes.
Okay, so AMD or Intel has nothing to do with it. The music, as you know, is stored on the computer in bits. It's digital, right?
Yeah.
And when you take it out of the headphone jack, the key element in that process is something called a DAC, a digital to analog converter, because the headphone jack is analog. And that's what's going into your stereo, and it's going into the, you know, probably the aux in or something like that of your stereo. And your stereo is all analog, probably, in most cases, and then the speakers are analog, so it just stays analog. And that's one way to do it. And so really, if you want to say, well, how do I get the best music out of my computer? The way you're doing it, you would say, well, what's the best DAC? But that's not the best way to do it because all sorts of noise and interference can get introduced with that headphone jack. And that's really the weak link there is that wire. So there are other ways to get music from your computer into your stereo that are all digital. And at that point, it doesn't matter what your computer is. It matters about the DAC in your stereo, the digital to analog converter in your stereo. Because it's going to get bits from the computer over Bluetooth or there are other technologies. Apple has AirPlay. Google has Google Cast. There are many technologies. One way you might want to try this, what music program do you use to play the music back?
Usually we use Spotify or okay. Pandora.
Both Spotify and Pandora support something called Google Cast. And Google makes a little $30, I think $35 dongle. It supports it. It has a digital optical cable that goes into your stereo, so it's digital. Your computer, you could actually do it with your phone and other devices. When you're using Pandora or Spotify, you might have even seen, if you have a Google device in your house, a Cast device in your house, you'll see a little icon, and you can say, send it to that Google Cast. Then there's no wires. Your computer can be anywhere on your Wi-Fi, including in your bedroom while you're making music in the living room. You can do it from a phone or other devices as well. And you're getting the best, you're going to get the best quality audio into your stereo by doing that.
Okay.
That's called the Chromecast Audio.
Okay.
And for that to work, your amplifier has to have a digital audio input. Most do. It's an optical input.
I'm not sure it would because the speakers and the stereo system are from the 1970s.
Oh, no, it won't. Nice, though. Is it like a Macintosh and Klipshorns and like really nice old stereo? No.
This stereo is prior to PCs.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah, if it doesn't have an optical into your amplifier, which it sounds like it wouldn't. Then you're going to have to do what you're doing, which is analog audio. In that case, it doesn't matter really what laptop you get. Most laptops today have very good digital to analog converters. And as I said, really the weak link is that is that audio jack and the wire coming out of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Other ways to skin this cat, let's see, you could probably get a USB. This might improve it. In fact, if you get a new laptop of any kind, generally you can go out and buy better DACs as USB devices. USB, as you know, is digital. So the digital audio comes out of the computer into a box, which you then hook up to your stereo, and there are varieties of ways to do that, including the analog aux in. And that box has a better digital to analog converter. But truthfully, I think most computers these days have pretty good DACs. Certainly good enough. And I didn't ask, but if you're using MP3s, you know, highly compressed music, doesn't really matter what you do. Go ahead. Because your source material, you've already compressed it enough that it probably doesn't matter. I play an audiophile on the radio. I'm really too old. My hearing has deteriorated too much from many years of wearing headphones and radio and listening to loud concert music. I don't hear those high ends much anymore, and most of us people over a certain age don't. And so I can't truthfully claim to be able to hear the differences. But I, in an intellectual way, understand how to get the best possible audio, even if I can't tell the difference. 8888, Ask Leo. So the Chromecast has aux out, not optical? No, that's not true. Chromecast audio has optical out. I know, I use it. And I like it quite a bit. Apple's AirPlay works quite well similarly, although you have to have an AirPlay-enabled amplifier or receiver. There's Intel technologies to do this, too. But I think the Chromecast audio is my favorite. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Johnny Jett is with us. He is our traveling man. You'll find him at johnnyjett.com, and he joins us every week to tell us how to travel better with technology. Hi, Johnny.
Hello, Leo. You're the traveling man.
I'm back. 9 flights in 14 days, but I had a blast. And if you ever get a chance, if anybody ever gets a chance to go to the Galapagos Islands and, you know, see these amazing islands, they're slowly, you know, Ecuador is doing everything it can to preserve them, but the impact of humans is slowly changing the islands, and I don't know how much longer they'll be as pristine. They're not even now as pristine as they once were, but, man, it's amazing to see those animals.
I looked at some of your photos, and they were National Geographic worthy.
Oh, you're amazing. So kind. You're so kind. Yeah, I had a lot of fun. Go to my wife's, lifeoflisa.com. She took better pictures than I did. It made me mad, but that's the way it usually is. She's got a great eye. And then so that's one thing that was a challenge is what are we going to do with all these pictures? She took, get this, 4,000, and I took 4,000. Wow. 8,000 images. And we've spent probably most of the time we've been back trying to cull through them. I put together a slideshow on a Microsoft Office product called Sway that you can see on my blog, leolaporte.com. She's put her pictures on her Blogger blog at lifeoflisa.com. But I think the best thing is going to end up being Google Photos because we have a shared album there. So she's uploaded her pictures there. I've uploaded my pictures there. And we're slowly turning them into an album. And I have already ordered a book from them.
Well,
because that's the one thing I always wish I had a book, because then I can just put and then I'm done, by the way. I deleted the rejects. I'm done. I'm moving on because that was so many pictures. But boy, we had fun.
Yeah. When I travel, I take a lot of pictures every night. I try and download them and put them in a folder and just try and edit them. So I just not inundated when I get back.
I think that's absolutely the key. Yep.
But, you know, you're on vacation, so do you really want to do it?
Well, it's hard also if you don't have internet access. And that's where I use Google Fi, which is Google's, mobile carrier service. And I used a T-Mobile. I had 2 phones, an iPhone and a Google phone. And both of those offer slow but unlimited. Well, actually, the T-Mobile offers unlimited free data all over the world. And Google Fi doesn't charge you extra. They charge you the same amount as if you were in the States, plus unlimited free texting on both. So that was very handy for staying in touch, but also for kind of backing up photos. So like my best photos, I could put on Google Photos and they'd be saved.
And did you have cell service up at Machu Picchu?
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, yeah. It's kind of amazing. Everywhere you go these days, Wi-Fi and cell service is pretty ubiquitous.
But not out in the Galapagos. Just
no, because the idea is let's not have any human impact on most of the islands. There's only two islands where humans live. So that was really cool. Yeah, I had a great time. Yeah,
there's not a lot of places you can go in this world where you can go.
That's what's neat.
Escape.
Yeah, that's what's neat about it. Yeah.
So awesome.
You've got a site for us, I know, and an app.
Fire I sure
when
do.
Ready.
So my app is called Airport Sherpa, and the website's airportsherpa.io, which is Indian Ocean. Actually, my website also has a .io. I guess there seems like a lot of people are doing it this way. I don't know why.
It's a good address. It's memorable.
Yeah.
Your private concierge in all terminals. What does that mean?
Okay, so this is about to launch next week. So you should download it. This is perfect for travelers who are always on the run or in a hurry like me. They're going to start off in Baltimore, Washington International Airport, but then they're going to expand. So let's say you're right into your gate and you want something delivered, or you know within a week in advance, they'll deliver any food from the airport, even if it's not in your terminal, to your gate. Or if you need batteries for your camera or whatever. And they can buy it at the airport, and they charge $3.99. The fees start at $3.99.
That would be good to have known about, because Lisa left her camera battery in the hotel room on one of the first days of the trip. We were freaked out. We were able to call the hotel, and they couriered it to us. But see, if we'd had a concierge.
Yeah. Well, it starts at $3.99, so that would have been a little bit more money. But if you're getting food from the same terminal, I'm sure it's what the $3.99 is. But still. There are apps where you can order your food in advance, but there's no apps out there that will let you bring the food
to
your gate.
I like this. Yeah.
And that's important because, you don't want to wait in line to get the food, even if you order in advance. And, I can't wait to try it. It hasn't started yet. And right now it's only on iOS, but Android is supposedly coming soon. But, we'll see if it's rolled out at multiple airports. But right now it's supposed to be Baltimore, Washington.
That's always the problem with all of these things is they start small. And I don't blame them, but yeah, that's
right.
Yeah.
And But if these guys take a lot longer, then makes room for someone else to come in.
That's true.
And bring in some competition, because it's a brilliant idea. And I would love to do something like this.
Airportsherpa.io.
And so my next website is called awardx.io. So award, AWARD. EX.io. So, if you have miles and points and you're trying to find the best value, I mentioned a website similar to this a few weeks ago, but this one you put in your city codes, airport cities, and then you select which program you want to use. So if you want to use your Chase Ultimate Rewards or your City Thank You Points or your Amex Membership Rewards or, Starwood Preferred Guest, or up to 60 airlines, although American Airlines is not listed, which was a bummer because I use American a lot. And then they'll send you instructions how to book. But how they kind of get you is that they give you the first five free. They give you credits to start off, and then if you want to keep searching, they charge you for it.
Oh.
But hopefully you'll be able to find what you're looking for in the first five searches.
That's a pretty good deal, yeah.
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 I mean, everyone's got to make money, so I don't blame them.
Yeah.
But I just put it in L.A. to Toronto because I fly that often since my wife is from Toronto. And there were 181 results, and the cheapest was 12,500 points plus $5.60 in taxes, which is a great deal. But this is a great place to start just to see how you can use them, and it'll show you how to do it. And again, if you have your credit card points, it's a really good way to offset your travel costs.
AwardX, AWARDEX dot IO.
Yes.
Very nice. Johnny Jett, of course, lives at his website, johnnyjett.com. You're just back from your travels. How'd it go traveling with a 6-month-old?
Oh, he's amazing. Now he's nine. So Jack's been, he was a real trooper. The first flight, not so great. The last two were amazing. And we're going again this week. So
you asked me what my for my favorite travel tip, and I'll tell you, as much as I love it that you bring Jack on the airplane, occasionally you will have a screaming baby or sometimes just a screaming passenger on a flight. And yep. Having good headphones that you can block out the noise is a must, especially on a long flight. And I carry Etymotic, Etymotic. They're not noise canceling, because those won't cancel like a baby's crying. Those just cancel the engine noise. The Etymotics go deep in your ear and they block the sound. And so if you're listening to music, you can't hear a thing. Which means you should pay attention to the flight announcements, because
do they hurt your ear after a while?
I don't mind them, but some people complain. It took me a while to get used to them. I used to gag when I put them in because they do go kind of deep.
Wow!
But you get used to that, and now I love them. I love them. Then you know those Bose. I have some Bose and a variety of other canceling headphones and so forth. But it's, you know, traveling is such a privilege and a joy, and it's so great to see the world and learn about other cultures, people, other animals and plants. And I feel very fortunate. And I know you do too.
Johnny, yeah, it was great. I loved your photos.
Thank you. JohnnyJet.com for all of his photos and articles. Follow him on Instagram as well and on Twitter at JohnnyJet. Leo Laporte,
the tech guy.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Yeah. Welcome home. How long do you get to be home now?
Just for a few days.
Oh, no. Then what?
Then we're going back. We're going out on the road. But
wow.
We're just going back and forth.
Oh, you're going back to Canada?
No. Actually, we're going somewhere different this week.
Oh.
But back and forth to the airport, I mean.
Oh. All right, Johnny. Take care.
Right. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Here is the... Here's the full screen edition of these pictures. The Laportes visit Machu Picchu and the Galapagos. And I've shown these before, so I apologize if you've already seen them. There's no music. There are captions. You can see the whole thing yourself at my blog, leolaporte.com. Here's Lisa in Lima, Peru, looking out the window of our hotel. Apparently, Lima is always overcast, which seems like... not a good thing. We did have a day there, so we were able to go to a museum, the Museo Larco, which was really fun to see get ready to see the Inca site by seeing the pre-Columbian artifacts and eating some amazing Peruvian food. Then we flew to Cusco and took the train to Machu Picchu. And I'll show you. This is the iPhone. This is the camera phone picture. It's better than any of my other pictures of Machu Picchu. Although that's a pretty good one. This is the Sun Temple, and it apparently is aligned in such a way so that when the sun rises at the Sun Gate here, which is a gap in the mountains, it shines in through this window here. And they were still carving the altar when they abandoned the site. The Incas were running from the Spaniards. Machu Picchu is gorgeous. And we got up very early. This is a bunch of other people also up at 5:30 because the place doesn't open until 6 a.m. because we wanted to catch the sunrise. And it rises over Machu Picchu. It's quite beautiful. Could see this. This is the camera phone image. Damn it! This, you see the sun coming in from the side and striking the side here. It's just gorgeous. So then, after Machu Picchu, we got back on the. Oh, first we took the Hiram Bingham fancy train. This is the bar car back to Cusco, and then a plane to Quito and Ecuador, and from there to the Galapagos Islands. Here are Lisa and Michael getting off the plane with relief. There's the boat we were on. It's an expedition vessel, only about 100 people on it. The boat, first night, we went around this rock, which is, this is unretouched. This is just the sunset on the rock. It was just so gorgeous. I didn't take the next two penguin pictures. I lent my camera to one of the guides, Javier Garcia, who took some great pictures. Then the rest of these are mine. That's called the Bishop. Can you see why? There's the guides. Javier's the guy in the middle. We had great guides with us. They're all national park guides. Blue-footed booby. See why they call them blue-footed? Their feet are blue. That is a heron of some kind. That is a sea turtle. That is a pelican. These are fighting frigate birds. They don't fish for themselves. They steal food from others, including other frigate birds. Let's see what else. You can see these for yourself. Here's a seal that was swimming next to us. The seals are really friendly. Oh, we went out. The whales were migrating, so we went out in these zodiacs. Everything you do is... Oh, I got to go back to work. Bill in Winnetka, Kansas. Hi, Bill. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Bill. Come on over. Hi, Bill.
Hello?
Yeah, welcome. You're on the air.
Oh, Winnetka, California.
Oh, what did I say?
Kansas.
Kansas? I don't want to put you in Kansas. We'll keep you in California. Hi.
Oh, perfect. Hi. I have a third-party server that our company had bought, and they put Windows 8 Pro on, along with our SQL server on one spinning drive.
Okay.
And I wanted to upgrade that to a solid state drive.
Okay.
Our computers are having a bunch of latency lately.
Okay. You want to speed them up. So are you hosting this out of a – where are you hosting it from?
We run a flower shop, and we have multiple clients.
Ah. And people log into your system to order stuff or –
No. Actually, for the POS, the point of sale system.
I see. I got it. Okay.
And other things, they run off the same client.
So you want to speed it up by putting an SSD in?
Correct.
Shouldn't be too complicated. The only issue might be the company that provides you with the proprietary point of sale software. Sometimes they're funny about their licenses. And they play tricks. You know, copy protection is the big bugbear here. They play tricks to keep you from copying the software. Normally, I mean, if you were just running everyday software, you would clone the spinning drive onto an SSD and swap them. And by clone, I mean, really clone is sector by sector cloning. You don't want anything smart. You want something that's dumb enough just to make a duplicate of the original drive. In fact, when you buy the SSD, when you buy any drive, the companies that make hard drives, Seagate and I don't know who there is around anymore, Western Digital, they've acquired everybody. Used to be Hitachi and IBM. I think they've all been acquired. But Seagate and Western Digital and whoever else you might buy a drive from, all of them offer free drive software, and in there will be a drive cloning tool that will make a sector by sector copy. So you connect up the new drive. You can even do it externally as in a USB enclosure, or if you've got a PC with slots, you can put it in the PC, and you just run that software and you make a direct copy. And then you just swap the drives, take out the old drive, put in the new drive, and it should be exactly the same. But as I said, the gotcha here is if you're using proprietary software, if they're doing stuff to make sure you don't make copies of their software, it could cause a problem. Usually it doesn't, but it could. So that's why before you do this, call the point of sale system vendors and others. In fact, if you ask them, you're paying a lot of money probably for your point of sale system. If you ask them, they probably will tell you how to do this. That would be the only catch. It's pretty straightforward otherwise. Rob, Lake Forest, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Rob.
Hey, Leo, how are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
Hey, Leo, I wanted to give kudos to Dell and also ask a question about best practices on setting up a computer for the first time.
Okay.
I bought about a year and a half ago a Dell XPS 15 computer. It's a nice computer. And I noticed recently that the touchpad was pushing up, so I called Dell.
Yeah.
And I had bought the warranty for it, the type of warranty where they come to my house and fix it here. And Dell owned up to the fact that they said, hey, we're having some problems with some of the batteries. They're swelling up.
Ah, that would do it.
Okay.
And by the way, they really want to replace that because the next step after swelling up is exploding.
Well, here's what happened. After I don't know, there were several times I said, well, we're going to send the parts to a technician, and then we'll send him out. And it kept getting pushed back, And I finally said, why do you guys keep pushing it back? I just sent him an email. And the guy said, you know what? Give me 48 hours. I'll come back to you with a resolution.
Good.
But here's what they did. They sent me pretty much the highest-end XPS 15 they could send.
Wow.
It has the...
higher end than the one you bought?
Yep.
Wow.
My old one had an i7, I think it's Skylake. This one has an i7 7th generation.
They took good care of you. Yeah.
The old one had 16 gigs of RAM. The new one has 32.
Wow.
The old one had 500 gigabyte solid-state drive. The new one has 1 terabyte.
It's probably what they had lying around.
Yeah, that's what they said.
But that's congratulations, you won the lottery. Well done.
The new one also has a liquid crystal touch screen. The old one just had 1080p screen.
Very nice. Very nice. So, they needed to fix that because that is a dangerous thing. When lithium-ion batteries start to swell, I don't think I have to explain. That's a warning sign that you've got other problems.
Yep.
And the last thing you want is an exploding battery, and that's the last thing you don't want.
Let me ask you this. What are the chances it would happen on this new one?
It's unlikely. All manufacturers, including Dell and Apple, have had problems with swelling batteries. But, you know, these things happen. The chances are that you won't have that happen twice in a row. Okay. I can't promise you. But it was good. It was actually really lucky. And if you notice any symptoms, you should absolutely.
Sure.
You know, when the case starts to distort or bend, if things popping up as your trackpad was, that is exactly what happens. That's where the battery is in that bottom part of the laptop. By the way, very nice laptop. I love the Dell XPS laptops.
Let me ask you this. The reason I bought the original one is because I do video editing of my son's football games. So I put together. Certainly the year-end highlight video, and then I do 3 or 4 or 5 during the season.
Great.
Did I choose a good computer for
you? Sure did. Very nice. Right. Yeah, and you like it, right? And I think you'll like Touch.
Yeah, I love it. I love it.
I think you'll be happy with Touch. Dell makes very good screens. That's an excellent computer. I've bought Dell XPS 13s. I think for video editing, you're right to get a little bit bigger screen. I like a little bit more portable.
I use it for work, too, But for work, I don't need, you know, as much power.
No, I love them.
But hey, what are the best practices? I'm just setting up the computer right now. I got it yesterday. What are the things I should do to set this thing up?
I'll tell you what I do right away. First thing, remove all the trial wear. So go into the add, remove programs. I guess they call it programs and features now. But uninstall, McAfee trial wear, any trial wear that's on there. Dell's not too bad. They don't load it up too much.
And for example, I guess there's something called Nublu. I have no idea what that is. There's something else called Keeper Password Manager.
Yeah, that's a trial. Keeper is you get a 1 month trial of Keeper. It's a password manager. I uninstall all that stuff.
What about Nublu? What's that?
I don't know.
I'm just not sure.
Google Nublu. I don't know what Nublu is. You're right. There's some stuff that comes from Dell. Dell sometimes will put a updater on there. My Lenovo has Lenovo settings. Dell usually has some specialized stuff. You don't want to get rid of that, but you definitely want. And by the way, Microsoft put some stuff on there, too. You'll see Candy Crush Soda. You'll see some sort of weird Dungeons & Dragons game. I uninstall all that stuff.
Yeah, I installed everything I knew.
Yeah, well, leave the stuff you don't know. And if you Google it and you can't figure out what it is, just leave it. And then I make an image of it. And, you know, Dell and everybody else now in the Windows world will have a way of making recovery USB key. I do that right away. You want that right away in case a hard drive dies or whatever. And then I'm going to talk when we come back about imaging because that's an important thing to know about. We'll talk about that after the break. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Nublu. What is Nublu? Is it NU? How do you spell Nublu?
It's N-E-W, capital B-L-U-E, all one word.
Huh. I don't know what the heck that is. I've never seen that on a Dell before. Software installed in the factory Windows installation, Dell US. Oh, you know what? They list all this stuff on the Dell's knowledge base. So you can actually go through it, and they'll tell you what they install. That's nice. It's a video editor. Yeah, what do you use for video editing?
I'm using Adobe Premiere Elements, and then I'm learning After Effects.
So apparently your Dell comes with a trial of CyberLink Media Suite. And in the CyberLink Media Suite is NewBlue and ProDad.
I dumped CyberLink's Media Suite last night.
NewBlue was part of it. I would get rid of all of that, and there's a good reason to do that. It might conflict with your other editor.
Okay.
You don't want any plugins from other editors on that system. So unless you knew you were going to keep CyberLink, which is not that great, I wouldn't.
No, I dumped it.
Dump it all, and including NewBlue.
What about Paint 3D?
That's a Microsoft program. I'd leave that on. That's actually a Windows painting program. It comes with a new new version of Windows.
Viber?
That is a phone calling program, a video. Get rid of it. It's like Skype. Yeah, get rid of that.
Waves Max Audio Pro?
Leave that, I think. I'm suspecting that that's part of the... Let me just look at this Dell thing. That's probably part of the audio setup. You don't want, it's a little tricky, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it is. And I thought about just reformatting the whole entire drive.
Yeah, get rid of WaveMax.
Get rid of WaveMax.
Yeah. That's another one you don't want. That's kind of like CyberLink.
Okay. It's not necessarily.
It's an audio processor. Okay, now Sly Ferret is saying...
What's the free one? Velocity or... that I use for audio editing?
Oh, Audacity, yeah.
Audacity,
no, WaveMax... Yeah. Actually, maybe leave WaveMax. WaveMax, Sly Ferret in the chat room is saying it's part of Dell's audio driver. I think it's an effects driver. I'm not sure I would really care about it. But it's not going to...
As long as they're not taking up space.
Everything takes up space, but you've got a big drive. I wouldn't worry about it so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was filling up my 500 gigabyte drive, and so I'm happy they gave me the 1 terabyte.
You asked me, and that is the first thing I always do is I uninstall everything that's trialware, that's patently not what I want. And then I make an image, I do the recovery disks, and then I usually image, I then will install software I know I'm going to want. If you got your video editor in Audacity and so forth, I would install that and then make another image. The imager that I've been using is the one Steve Gibson just recently recommended. Let me see. I can never remember the name. But I have it in my I have it in my notes because I always am trying to remember. It's got a very generic name. Disk Imager.
Disk.
It's from Terabyte. Or I'm sorry, not Disk Imager. Drive Image. No, that's the wrong one. See, every time I do this, it's not from Terabyte. It's Drive Image from Runtime.
Drive Image.
XML from Runtime. It's not free. But it'll make a very nice image, and that way you can get back to any given point. And the ones you most always want are the original disks. The Dell will do that for you, and then the install the way it's just perfect before you got any malware on.
Okay, all right, beautiful.
All right, enjoy.
Thank you, sir.
Sounds like you got a good deal.
Yeah, I also recently bought a Synology. Happy with
good
that.
Good man.
So, a lot of my stuff is on the Synology now, not all.
Isn't
of it
great? Oh, I just love it.
Yeah, I did have to, because of some setups I had to hire a network guy to come work that out for me. That was kind of above my level. But it was $150. It wasn't bad.
It can get tricky.
Yep.
Yep.
So, thank you.
That's part of the power. Thanks for the call. Well, hello there. How are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography and smartphones and smartwatches. I'm back from vacation thanks to Scott Wilkinson and Jason Snell, who filled in for me last weekend. Appreciate a little time off, a little R&R. But I am now rested, relaxed, tanned, and ready to answer your questions. 8888-ASK-LEO is my phone number if you have a question or a comment or suggestion, you want to talk about tech, if you want to help some of our previous callers too, always welcome suggestions, experience. It's one of the reasons we have the chat room. Chat room is a great place if you want to kind of be part of the smart kids in the back of the class, you know, the kids who throwing spitballs at the teacher, those kids, all you have to do is go to irc.twit.tv. And all the answers, if you like to get the answers before the test, all the answers to all the questions are at techguylabs.com. That's my website. No charge, absolutely free. Please take advantage of it. It's got a great search. I was talking about drive imaging and why I like to do this. Our last caller before the top of the hour said, I got a new computer. What do you recommend for setting it up? And I said, of course, if it's a Windows machine, first, you don't have to do this on a Mac, but on a Windows machine, first thing to do is remove all the trialware. Some of it's put on by the manufacturer, Dell or Lenovo or HP. Some of it's put on by Microsoft themselves. And I just, you know, it's Microsoft even makes this difficult to do because some of them are installed programs and some of them are just little, we call them stubs, little mini programs that you click to install a program. Either way, I don't want to see them, so I remove them from the start menu and I usually uninstall them. If you see them in the start menu and they all show up in the start menu, usually you can just right-click on the start menu and I think it's under more. There's an uninstall. Just uninstall them there and get rid of all that stuff. Because unless you're really into Candy Crush Soda, then you want to keep it. But they have buttons for install Skype. Well, if I want Skype, I'll install it. I don't need a button to remind me to install Skype. So I get rid of all that stuff. Of course, you really want to make the recovery disks. Nowadays, I don't know of any manufacturers that ship, maybe some of the high-end boutique manufacturers, but none of the big guys will ship a disk, a Windows install disk. And of course, you can always download it and make it, but it's nice to run the program that says make the boot disks and make those boot disks. Nowadays, we don't make them on a CD or floppies. You make them on a USB key. If you have an 8 gigabyte or better USB key, you can just make it on that. And keep that around so you can get the real reason for that is to get the computer back to the way it was when you bought it. And that's why instead of just downloading Windows from Microsoft and reinstalling, and that's not a bad thing, you do this, though, because it has all the manufacturer's stuff, including all the trialware, sorry. But it also has all the manufacturer's additional materials sometimes they put on there. And then I make an image. Now, this is what we were going to talk about a little bit, is image. What is an image? We used to call them ghosting the drive because the first imaging program came from Norton. Remember the Norton utilities? It was called Norton Ghost. And it was used in businesses everywhere. The idea is I'm going to make a file that contains every bit on a hard drive. And if something should happen to the hard drive, I could put a new one in and restore the contents of that drive from that file. That file is a ghost or an image, is probably a better word, of the original. And it's nice to have because an image can be restored in minutes. You don't have to reinstall things. You don't have to change settings. Everything's there. All the stuff that you, all the tweaks, all the, you know, you got your desktop just right, your menus just right. All that stuff is preserved in the image. So I usually will make an image early on so I can, you know, get back to the beginning. It's kind of what those recovery disks will do, though. And then I will install everything I want. I will clean up the system. I'll do whatever it is that I do to all systems, and I make an image of that. And that way I can get back working pretty quickly. It's a nice thing once in a while to make another image. It's a kind of backup. It's not your only backup. I hope it's not. But it's a kind of backup that it can be quickly restored and get you back to a known starting point. So it's not a good way to back up the data that you create, but it's a great way to back up the system you created so that you can then restore your data from another place. 8888 Ask Leo, my phone number. Let's get back to the phones. Our next call comes from Sherman Oaks. Joe's on the line. Hi, Joe.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I actually had two questions, but they're both involving international travel from the United States.
I happen to have had some experience with that.
That's what I heard. So, we're going to a bunch of countries in Asia.
Nice.
And so I currently have, I'm bringing my cell phone with me, but I'm trying to decide whether it makes sense to get local SIM cards for each country or to get an international plan with my current carrier.
Comes down to who your carrier is.
I could tell you. I mean,
yes, that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, it's Verizon.
So Verizon, of all of them, Verizon is the least international friendly, unfortunately. And there's a number of reasons for that. What happened is that T-Mobile kind of changed everything when they said, hey, what we'll do is because they're owned by Deutsche Telekom, the German telecom, we're going to give you free data everywhere. And texting will be free. And then we'll charge, I think it was $2 a minute for calls. And that you don't have to do anything. It comes with your T-Mobile account. And that changed the world. That happened a few years ago. Then everybody responded. Both Sprint and AT&T have their own similar kind of all-you-can-eat international plans. I think AT&T has a day pass system that's fairly reasonable. I don't know what Verizon's is. The last time I used Verizon, it was appallingly expensive. So that's the first thing to do is inquire with Verizon. What's it going to cost me for international data? Do you know?
Yeah, the problem is that they have, it's different for each country, but they pretty much say the cheapest one is a $10 a day plan.
Yeah, that's kind of what AT&T does. It's as if, you were getting the Wi-Fi at the hotel, that kind of thing. So that's not bad.
We'll be gone for 20 days.
Pardon me?
We'll be gone for about 23 days.
Oh, and do they limit it to 2 weeks? Or, 20 days times 10 is only $200.
Yeah, but we're not going to have many phone calls. We're going to use Wi-Fi, or the real thing is I just want to have the data.
It's all about data. Yeah. So, and texting is nice because you can, for one thing, people are going to send you texts anyway. And incoming texts cost you as much as outbound texts. So it's nice to have a texting plan. And it's the easiest way to stay in touch and stay out of long, expensive, long-distance calls. So I do like the texting. And that usually comes with these international plans as well. It's easier to do that because if you get a SIM, first of all, you're going to have to get different SIMs for each country in most cases. If you get a SIM, each time your phone number will change. Your SIM is now a new phone number. So that makes it a little more complicated. You have to figure out how to get the SIM, although most times when you get to the airport, there are little vendors selling SIMs. But you have to understand the language and the rules well enough to understand what you're getting. So I'll tell you, I will refer you to a site I always send travelers to. It's the URL is not useful. Just Google prepaid with data wiki. It's a wiki, which means that everybody who travels contribute to it. So it's got up-to-date information about every country in the world, who the best vendors of SIM cards are, what their rates are, where to get them. It's a very useful compendium. You can go country by country. It's just Google prepaid with data and wiki, W-I-K-I, and we'll put a link in the show notes at techguylabs.com.
Okay. The second one question really relates to that as well. In terms of encryption of the phone, because if the phone gets taken, I currently have it's an Android phone, a Samsung Galaxy 6.
Yeah. So the Samsung and almost all phones now encrypt by default. If not, you'll find encryption in the settings. Turn that on. More importantly, use a strong passcode and turn on the feature that says if somebody guesses wrong more than 10 times, erase my phone. There, you'll also find, I think Samsung has their own under the Samsung account, but there's also the Android device manager. Apple has Find My iPhone. It'll let you wipe the phone remotely. That's a nice peace of mind protection, too. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, so always turn those on. But I would add the caveat that if you do get your phone lost, don't use the Find My Phone feature to track it down. You could get knifed. It's not a good idea. I see people do that, and I go, "You are nuts." Do not get your phone back, but wipe it.
Well, the question is really, I have the encryption turned on, but it only decrypts apparently if the phone is turned off, and then you turn it back on. And after that, if you put, I don't have a passcode.
That's why you need. That's why you need a good, strong passcode.
Okay. Because if it's turned on, if someone were to take the phone, they could still look at the pattern or whatever. But I have a pattern, so you need a passcode.
Pattern is good. Pattern is better than nothing, obviously, and it's certainly more convenient than a passcode. But a pattern isn't as good as, and I just use a 7-digit number. It's my childhood phone number. And that's burned into my brain. And I can enter it pretty quickly. And I would, at least for your trip, I would do that.
Yeah. Okay.
And then just to reassure you, I know people are worried about re-entering the country. I had zero issues entering the country. And I think that they're saying it's very few people that will ask to see your phone.
Yeah.
So unless you have a Muslim-sounding name or you're wearing...
No, I don't have a problem. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
It was more the encryption thing. And, you know, the data plan, we don't need really texting because I'd be texting the people that I'm with. And we use WhatsApp or whatever.
Perfect.
And that's free.
And that's on data. So yeah. And you're right, especially in Asia, almost everywhere you go, you find Wi-Fi. So it's for it's just for those times when you're in the street and you need a map. But boy, it's not. Or, you know, or just say, where's the good restaurant around here? That is very valuable. Yeah.
And that's why I'm looking for the data plan. And that's why I'm trying to figure out which makes sense.
Yeah. The nice thing about the AT&T plan, I bet you Verizon's the same. They're very, you know, they all watch each other like hawks and copy what they do, is that you don't have to use it every day. In fact, you could turn it on as needed. So you could say, you know what? I need data. Sign me up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of handy. You probably wouldn't use it every day.
Yeah. Well, we're going to five different countries, which is also...
Yeah, you don't want to get a SIM. You don't want to get a SIM in every country. It's changing in Europe. The EU has required that there be roaming within the EU, so it's a little easier in Europe. But in Asia, I think you'd have to get a SIM for every country.
Yeah, you do. And that's the biggest problem is you got to... And it's like... It's $15 to $20 per SIM, and they tend to be good for like 5 days, 6 days,
right.
And then you got to get another SIM.
Yeah, so. It's a real pain in the butt. I tell you, consider if you're going to travel a lot, move to T-Mobile or Google Fi, because you don't have to do anything. T-Mobile, you just get data, and often they say, "Oh, well, you know, it's going to be slow." It's often 3G or even LTE. It was often LTE, and it was great.
Yeah, so
for future.
Maybe I'll switch for a month.
Yeah.
I'll switch to T-Mobile for a month and then switch back.
You can also do that. I actually do that. I have an extra T-Mobile SIM I give my wife. So she's on T-Mobile. Actually, she's T-Mobile now. She moved, but when she was Verizon, I would give her a T-Mobile SIM and she'd just be the T-Mobile for the trip. What kind of phone do you have? Oh, you said Samsung Galaxy. Yeah, I don't know if you can switch. Verizon's not allowed to lock their LTE SIM.
Right.
Slots. So you probably could get a Google Fi account or a T-Mobile account just for the trip.
Mm-hmm.
Change your phone number, but that's it. All right.
Yeah.
Where are you going in Asia?
We're going to Singapore, Vietnam, Malaysia, Thailand, and then Australia.
I'm jealous.
So
have a great trip. Wonderful trip.
Yeah.
That sounds fabulous. Take care.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
Bye-bye. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 88 Ask Leo. The website, techguylabs.com. Everything's there. You don't have to remember anything, write anything down. We put it all there, and it's free and open and easy to access. techguylabs.com. Jeff in Diamond Bar. Hi, Jeff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Leo. I am considering getting an EERO, I guess it's pronounced Eero, Wi-Fi system.
Yeah, Eero.
The reason being is I've got a variety of extenders in my home, and not only do I need to... on smartphones and so forth, if I want to use the Wi-Fi, switch it from room to room.
Just throw out the... Believe I have been there. I know exactly how you feel. And you're going to love... So Eero is part of is really a revolution in Wi-Fi. There are a number of companies doing these. They're called mesh routers. I should mention Eero is a sponsor on some of my podcasts. Disclaimer up front. I use Eero. I set my mom up with Eero. They're great, but they're not the only one. There are a variety of these, and they all are better than what you're doing.
Okay. Well, the other thing that I was hoping to improve on is I've got some smart TVs that are connected to some of my extenders, and as you know, the main router, a Wi-Fi, it provides a good signal, but as it steps into the
extenders... You want wired to your TV. Is that what you're saying?
Well, it doesn't have to be wired, but it's just that right now a wireless signal that comes through to TVs in other rooms does that by way of extenders, and those extenders have dramatically reduced signal strength.
Yeah. So the way extenders work is by cutting your speed in half. because they're not full duplex. They have to take half of that bandwidth to communicate with the base station and then the other half to communicate with you. Mesh routers, the chief innovation of mesh routers is they use a separate signal to communicate with the base station. That's the big difference. Now, mesh routers have gotten smarter and smarter. In fact, Eero's getting a big update with these new Eero beacons that will make Eero even better. But I've also used, I would also happily recommend Plume, P-L-U-M-E. And Plume is interesting because while it's not as fast as some of the solutions, it's more consistent. I really liked the Netgear Orbi, O-R-B-I. If you're a router buff, you might like the Orbi better because it's a more traditional, the settings are more traditional router settings. Most of these other mesh devices like Eero and Plume give you some more limited capabilities in an app on a smartphone. That's kind of how you configure them. So if you're kind of like into routers, I would look at the Netgear Orbi. But there are a lot of them too. There's Amplify from Ubiquiti. They were kind of the fathers of all of this. They did this in the enterprise for years. Linksys has one now. I can't remember its name. Anyway, I would happily recommend the Eero. I think you'll love them. Oh, Google has theirs. Do not get the Googles. I found those were not as good as the Eeros.
Oh, okay. And will the, you know, right now I'm using, I think I've got two or three extenders.
Yeah.
And with, you know, with minimal.
Rule of thumb is 1,500 square feet per Eero hub.
Oh, okay. Even if I've got, I mean, it's the nooks and crannies and turns in the house, and I've got a second floor. So
well, that can add, yeah. So this is why Wi-Fi is so problematic, is because all of this affects Wi-Fi. Humans affect Wi-Fi. We're big bags of liquid, and that is bad for Wi-Fi. So if you walk in front of a router, you'll notice it drops your connectivity considerably. So my suggestion would be they start with packs of three. These are pricey, by the way. Get ready. All of these mesh solutions are fairly expensive. I think $300 for the three-pack. And then if you need to, you know, start with that. And if you need, put one upstairs. One obviously has to be next to your modem.
Right.
And then one by the TV maybe, if that's the, you know, you kind of, it'll help you place them. And then if you need more, you can buy them onesie-twosie.
Okay. Now the, what was I going to ask about that? There's a new model. Well, I don't know if it's a new model, but it's a new system that's not going to be out, I guess, for a few days. Is it actually an improvement, or is it just the packaging of their three Ethernet kind of wired models?
Yeah, I haven't yet reviewed or tried the Eero Beacon system. I believe they think it's a lot better. It's certainly a lot more aesthetic because it just plugs into the wall.
Uh-huh.
Right. And I think that they have, you know, one of the advantages of these mesh routers is they're constantly being updated. There's, you know, they're very actively updated and improved. And it would be my guess that Eero is adding these new devices because they'll be better. I am going to talk to somebody later this afternoon, actually, that's reviewing these. And I'll try to get a sense of whether it's worth waiting for.
Okay.
You know, you can... Actually, I wonder, are they selling? So you say it's a few days? I would wait the few days.
Yeah, well, it says available, you know, on Amazon or them, and I can't. You can order direct, and I think at least directly.
It's the same. If you order from Amazon, it comes from Eero.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do the same. Yeah.
And you can pre-order. So they've got the.
Let me look at.
They're listing on the Beacon one, and then the one they call the Wi-Fi Pro, which
yeah.
I think is just.
That's the one I have, you know, the original one.
Okay.
The Beacon, half the size of the original. It's a full-fledged access point. I think they just discovered they could jam the same thing in a smaller package. They say 30% better performance, but that's not – I don't know what they mean. Better than what?
Yeah.
Has a LED nightlight. It's mostly because of the convenience of plugging it in the wall. The fact that they named the old ones the Pros, though, makes me feel like maybe those are better somehow. I have to look at the specs, and I haven't seen those yet of how much power and so forth. But I've been. You're gonna see it's what you're trying to do with the extenders, but better.
Okay, great. Well, thank you.
Yeah. Oh, there. Dr. Mom says the difference she can tell from the Eero Beacon is that it doesn't have the LAN ports. So the LAN ports are nice if you have hardwired devices. The Eero is one of the unusual things about the Eero is you can plug it into any place you've got Ethernet. So if you're lucky enough to have a wired house where your internet comes in over a wired jack in multiple rooms, The Eero's really great because you can then plug it in. You would want to get the Pros for that. You plug it in. Otherwise, get the Beacon because you're not going to be plugging it into anything. You're just going to plug it into the wall, and it's certainly a lot smaller and more compact. 30% better than what, though? I wish they would. I don't know what they're implying. Eero's an interesting company. I've been using the Plumes lately in my house, and one of the reasons I like the Plumes is because they plug into the wall. They're very small, very compact, and they're designed to give more consistent Wi-Fi everywhere. So you put a Plume in every room, but that also means it ends up being more expensive. I think they're $49 if you buy enough of them each, but you may want to get 6 or 10 of them. So it ends up, it could be a very expensive solution. I think the Eero is a good way to go. I'm going to be talking to Jim Salter over at The Wirecutter. He's doing a updated review at The Wirecutter, which is a great New York Times site where they review all the products out there. And Jim is a really smart network guy. He looked at all of the mesh routers. He picked the Orbi. Next runner-up was Eero. I had the Orbi for some time and found it to be probably, and he agrees, the fastest of them. It's a power tool, but it only has two units for roughly the same price, a base station and one satellite. The Eero and Plume come with three units typically. Any of them will be better than what you got now. Plume, I notice also the software is getting smarter, which is one of the things I like about these. Most router companies, they sell the router and then they just ignore you. If you want a better one, you're just going to have to buy it. 8888 Ask Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls after this. So I looked a little bit into the specs on the new Eeros. The original Eero, the one I use, is dual band. It has one 2.4 gigahertz and one 5 gigahertz radio. And that's pretty common in a lot of routers. It also has 2X MU-MIMO. Ooh. 2x2 MU-MIMO. You don't need to know what that means. The new Eero Pro is tri-band. It has two 5 gigahertz bands as well as the 2.4 gigahertz band. That would be better. It would help you with congestion if you have a lot of devices. And nowadays, who doesn't? I have 40-plus devices on my network. And so having more bands helps you negotiate the 5 gigahertz bands are good for short ranges and higher speed throughputs. 2.4 gigahertz is better for long range when speed isn't as important. The Beacon is a dual band device. It's basically the original Eero, it sounds like, packaged into a smaller package minus the Ethernet ports. So I would say if you really want the best Eero performance, you're going to get the three Eero Pros. Start with that. And because you'll benefit from having three bands, three frequencies available. So there you go. I did a little research during the break. Next on the line, Sarah in Los Angeles. Hi, Sarah. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. How are you today?
I am well. How are you?
I'm good. I had a question about the new, I don't know what it's called, but it's like an Echo, but it's Google.
Yeah, Google. Google Home.
Yeah, what's it called?
The Google Home.
Yeah, the Google Home. So my son sent me a text with something about that one, and we need to maybe switch from the Echo.
Oh, no, you don't need to switch. No, I have both. The Google Home, you can kind of gauge how it would work for you if you've used the Google Assistant, which you can use on your iPhone or your Android phone. It's very much like that. It's a good knowledge assistant. It's very useful for that. But Amazon's been around a little longer. The Echoes are more than 2 years old now. They celebrated their second birthday right about when Google came out with the Home. And as a result, I think there are a lot more skills available and a lot more hardware products like, by the way, the Eero that work with the Echo. The Eero doesn't work with the Google Home. You can talk to your Echo and say, turn off the Wi-Fi or turn off the kids' Wi-Fi, that kind of thing. You can't do that with a Google Home. Why did your son think you'd prefer a Google Home?
Because you can call, make phone calls.
Oh, I think. Yeah, okay, that is a very cool feature. It's not out yet, but Google announced, actually that might be, if you want to do it, use it as a phone, Google's announced that that soon they will enable free calling in the U.S. and Canada to any phone from a Google Home.
Right.
Right now, the Amazon Echo, you can call any Echo, but you can't call phones. But Google's going to let you call phones, and that's free. I know when they announced that, I thought, wow, that changes how people think about telephones. Basically, now phone calling is free.
Exactly, and I think that was the thing that impressed him the most. Like, wow, he can just make a phone call because he loves his Echo.
Tell me about how you use the Echo. What do you use it for?
I don't use it for it. I bought it for him as a gift because he's like...
Oh, for him. Oh, I get it. For him.
Exactly. So when he sent me that, like, oh, maybe you should check into that. I think like a hint for another gift.
You know, some people like me have both. I'm not sure I'd recommend that because it can get confusing, but there are some things the Echo's better at. For instance, if you use Amazon services, for instance, I'm a big audiobook fan. I use Amazon's Audible audiobooks, and I can have the Echo read to me. Google Home doesn't know what I'm talking about. But on the other hand, I use Google Play Music, and that's not available on the Amazon Echo. It's only available on the Google Home. Spotify is available on both. So it's kind of, you have to ask your son, well, what are you using your Echo for? Because some things he uses the Echo for may not work on the Google Home. On the other hand, there are things that Google Home will do, like phone calls, that are better. Is he going to call you?
I doubt it. I doubt if he's calling me. But
well, maybe that's his promise. I'll call you more, Mom, if you get me this Google Home. It's free, you know. Now, remember, if you're using the Google Home, you're using a speakerphone because you can't put, you don't pick it up and put it to your ear. So everybody's hearing the phone call. So it's maybe not the perfect replacement for a phone, but.
Right. Because, he can use his cell phone for speakers. So I just thought,
he's got free calling on his cell phone. It's not a breakthrough product in that regard, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I think when he's walking, when they're doing something, he could just go ahead and talk.
I would use it that way. I know. I think I would use it that way. I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, but that's the only advantage of
the Google Home. The difference is they're very similar. They're voice assistants. You talk to them. They both do timers, kitchen timers. The Google Home will name the timer. So you can say, set a timer for 4 minutes for bacon. And then you can say, what's the bacon timer now? You can't do that with the Echo. The Google Home's a little smarter about facts. The Echo's a little better at home automation and interfacing with your house. So each has its own merits and negatives. It's hard to say. I think both of them are good.
Okay.
Yeah. If he's already got an Echo, don't get a Google Home. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, that's what I thought. His birthday's coming up, and I got the Echo for him last year for his birthday.
Get him another Echo.
Okay, well, I'll get her.
Get him an Echo Dot. Or get him a Bluetooth.
He liked that so much that he got his brother a Dot for Christmas.
Yeah, the Dot's nice, but you need a speaker. So you get him a Bluetooth speaker to go with his Dot or his Echo for better sound.
Yeah, because he does need that, so I should get that for the other one.
There you go. That's a better one.
One more quick question, which doesn't have anything to do with either one of these. Talking about the other son, he has an iPad, but it's cracked, so he's thinking about getting it repaired. But I heard there's a new iPad that just came out that actually is more like a laptop.
The new iPad is sweet.
So I was thinking, because he doesn't want his Dell anymore. He's like, I'm just going with Apple. I want everything.
Oh, then you should get him.
Everything to be...
Yeah. You should get him the iPad Pro. The new one is the 10.5-inch, which is really nice. It's the fastest iPad I've ever used, and noticeably so, because it has the best camera they've ever put in an iPad. It has easily the best screen I've seen on any device of any kind. It's an incredible screen. It's pricey. But the iPad Pro, and then if you're going to get it for him and he's going to replace his laptop, he's probably going to want a keyboard too. But you could. Okay. I'm very actively thinking about the next time I travel, instead of bringing a laptop, just bringing the iPad Pro. Does he draw? Right, does he do anything?
No, he doesn't. Not really. But I think it's a nice feature in case, because he is going back to school and he's getting his master's. So I don't know.
Oh, what's his master's in?
It's going to be in physical ed.
Nice.
Bachelor's in communications, but I think he wants to do some.
And he says, I'm tired of carrying around, lugging around a laptop. I just want to do it all. I think we're getting really close. And Apple has announced this fall they're going to make changes to the iPad operating system that really will make it much more like a computer. a laptop computer. I think they're getting. I think this is Apple's plan for the iPad, frankly.
So the iPad Pro, then, that you're talking about now, is not the will not be the latest in, like, because I know there's something like you can draw or
this new one just came out. It was announced on June 5th. It arrived. I just got mine about 10 days ago. It is the iPad Pro 10.5, and they updated the 12.9. I think that one's awfully big. But if he wants a bigger screen, they make a 12.9 as well. And that was updated as well. But I think the one that's really the top of the line at this point, not the most expensive, but the most capable, is the 10.5-inch iPad Pro that just came out. Highly recommended. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo, the phone number. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, back from his appearance on Broadway as Evan Hansen. It's Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer, and we call him the Gizwiz because he's just chock full of gizmos and gadgets. Hello, Dickie D.
Leo, welcome back. I saw some of your photos. Just absolutely amazing stuff.
We had a great time. Went to the Galapagos Islands. And that was amazing. That was amazing.
Oh, yeah. It looks super. Yeah. Great sunsets. And yeah, so beautiful. Some of us were back here working.
Well, did you have a good time working?
Not a bad time. Actually, it was a fun time. Last week, there was a digital focus show here in New York City. And the folks at Monoprice, you know, you and I, we always go to Monoprice.
Oh, yeah.
Cables.
Oh, yeah.
So they were showing their new Select Mini 3D printer version 2.
What is that?
Now, my co-host on the Gizwiz said, Dick, version 1, I love it. So version 2, now it's fully assembled, calibrated at the factory. All you do is when you unpack it is verify that the print bed is still level.
Is it a 3D printer?
It's a 3D printer, Leo. Oh. So it has Wi-Fi, micro SD, USB. So you can print instantly. They include an SD card with some projects already on it. So you can start printing right away. And the selling price is $219.
Wow.
And if that's too much, the guy from Monoprice said, Dick, in August, we're coming out with a 3D printer for $149.
Wow.
And he said it's for the novice. We wanted to make it so you open the box. There were not parts in there. There was a ready-to-go 3D printer. I asked about Wi-Fi. He said, for $149, we couldn't do Wi-Fi, but as USB, takes an SD card. And the 219 version has a new 3.7 IPS color screen, upgraded cooling. It's really a fun thing. You can build projects 4x7 square, 4x7 by 4x7 by 4x7. But it's really neat. So If I had room for one of those, that's my price point right there.
What would you print if you had a 3D printer?
You know what? I want to print myself some new teeth.
Sure. George Washington had wooden teeth. You could have PLA just, plastic teeth.
You know, just in case. You know, I consider it carbonite for teeth.
It's the best backup.
Backup teeth.
It isn't kind of that far-fetched to imagine a day where you would put something in your mouth that would do a 3D scan of your teeth and connect it to a printer would print out new teeth for you.
Yeah.
Then you still have to hire a trained dentist to put them in.
To do it in. But I know they already do that because a friend of mine had to have a new tooth put in. And he said, Dick, I went there and they took the impression and everything. And he said, do I come back next week? And the dentist, no, you come back in an hour because
we're
going to
make
print
it. Wow. Yeah. They 3D print teeth?
Yeah, but they used red filament, so I was not
okay. When you say Bluetooth, you mean a blue tooth. Yeah, okay.
That's very funny. Okay. Yeah, he had red tooth.
Red tooth. It's the latest thing. Yeah. So we can find out about this at monoprice.com?
Monoprice.com or gizwiz.biz and click on Dick Visits, the tech guy.
You should go to gizwiz.biz, actually. That's Dick's website. And when you're there, you can see all the things he mentions on this show and other shows that he appears on. You can find out about his podcast, The Gizwiz, at gizwiz.tv. But most importantly, you can get a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine with the What the Heck Is It contest. And all the rules and everything are there. But basically, I can sum it up. You're going to get a close-up picture of a gizmo or gadget. He's got 12 autographed copies of Mad Magazine for the 12 best write it. Well, I guess they're not. They're all, if they're right, they're the best. So you pick them at randomly if you get more than 12, right?
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And then you have the judges decide the 12 funniest or best in 20, the sense.
24.
24. Wow, you're generous.
Yeah. You should take a vacation.
I can't. I've only been doing this with you for 20 years. I can't remember how it works anymore.
The funny thing is, right before you said that, in my mind, I'm saying this guy was on a 2-week vacation. He has every single fact right except that. but I'm still impressed.
It wouldn't mind being too perfect. Yeah. Gizwiz.biz, GIZWIZ.biz. Thank you, Dickie D.
Thank you, buddy. Welcome back.
Jeff, Apple Valley. I think you might be the last call of the day. Hi, Jeff.
Hello. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
Well, thank you, Leo. I'm glad I'm the last call of the day and got this in.
Good,
I'm having
too.
A very strange problem with my search engines on my computer. You go to the search, well, actually, you just turn them on, and suddenly all the search bar fills in with is left bracket, left bracket, left bracket, every now and then a apostrophe, and it fills the entire search bar and keeps on going and keeps on moving.
And that doesn't happen if you have a word processor document open? That doesn't happen?
Nothing.
Nowhere else? Because, you know, obviously the first thing I think is, oh, you got a stuck key or a zapped keyboard and it's typing. But it's only happening on the browser.
It's only happening on the browser.
Yeah. It does. Some, Dr. Mom in our chat room says, sounds like when my cat walks on the keyboard. You don't have any cats, do you?
No.
No, this is a browser problem. What browser are you using?
Well, it happens on both of them, as a matter of fact.
Oh, that's interesting. All right.
I've got Mozilla, and I have both the Edge browser, of course, on this.
You know, if you got Windows 10, which you do, just try, for grins, you also have, though they hide it, Internet Explorer on there.
I do indeed. Let's see if I can.
All you have to do is hit the Windows key and start typing Internet, and it'll populate Internet Explorer at some point and hit return. Windows key, and you start typing the program you want to launch. That's a really nice shortcut in Windows. And I'm just curious if it happens in Internet Explorer as well.
Well, we have another problem now. I went to the Windows key, hit it. It opened up, and suddenly in the search engine, it just starts doing the same thing. I can't get to the program.
Oh, very interesting. So that's really interesting. So now if you hit Windows key, it starts typing brace, colon, as well.
Exactly.
Oh, wow. But not in any other, like you open Notepad and you click the cursor and you start typing, it types normally.
Can't even get to Notepad. I'm trying to see if I have something else on my open up right now that I potentially can get to that I can write something on.
Is it a laptop or desktop?
It's a desktop.
Just unplug the keyboard and see. And do you have any other keyboards lying around?
Yeah, I do, as a matter of fact, somewhere around here.
I would just plug in a different keyboard just to really eliminate that as a culprit.
Yeah,
just because it does sound like, if that, by the way, if it continues to happen with the other keyboard, then there is something on your machine. See, the thing is, if it just happened in the browser or one browser, I would say, oh, yeah, you got a browser hijacker object that's poorly written, it's crashing, or something's going on. Something was, you know, and these things are easy to pick up by accident. You can install some software and they'll have a little fine print that says, oh, and by the way, we're going to install the fabulous browser hijacker toolbar. You don't mind, do you? And you just don't even notice it, and it's installed. It happens to everybody. Sometimes that could cause it. But the fact that it's happening not just on your browsers, but now it's happening with Cortana, but this is something serious. Something serious. Hard for me to diagnose. Check with another keyboard. If it continues to happen, boy, you got me. I think it might be called for reinstalling Windows. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hang on, though. Let's see if we can get some other opinions. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy Show for today. Thank you so much for being here. And don't forget, it's just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows on the Netcast Network. It's called TWIT, T-W-I-T. It stands for This Week in Tech, and you'll find it at twit.tv, including the podcasts for this show. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPads, iPhones, Apple Watches on iOS Today, security on Security Now. I mean, I can go on and on and on. You even get your daily dose of tech news with Tech News Today. And, of course, the big show every Sunday afternoon, This Week in Tech. You'll find it all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next week with another great Tech Guy show. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you next time. So one other thing somebody's suggesting, and I think this is always a good diagnostic on Windows, is to log out of your account and log into another account. If you have an administrator account or...
admin, I'll do that.
Yeah.
Figure out.
It sounds like you've lost control of your system at this point, though.
It does seem that way, and I'm a little surprised, to say the least, but I'm going to do everything you just mentioned. But before you let me go, I have one request, though.
Yes, sir.
A few weeks ago, you went on a tirade. Well, tirade is the wrong word, but you vehemently said this is the wrong time that Norton should leave all computers on the face of the planet.
Yes. And by the way, I'm not alone in this opinion, but go ahead. Yeah.
Now, having said that, I think you may have a good point. But I'm old school. I'm basically like everybody else who calls you. I've known you since, and it's forever, of course. I think you really should have a program that extends this discussion, because for old people like me, not going with without a antivirus program like Norton is like, you just don't do it.
Well, times have changed. And the good news is, if you really say, oh, I can't live without an antivirus, Windows 10 has an antivirus on there.
I know that Defender is fine, but, you know, we've spent, and you are responsible as much as anybody else for pushing great antivirus programs.
Oh, yeah. For years, it was the right solution because Windows was so risky to use, but it is no longer the right solution.
I understand that, but I think it would be nice if you actually had a show or a part of your show currently where you bring in experts besides yourself to explain the exact reasons why.
Okay.
Make us feel more comfortable about taking Norton off.
Okay. That's a great idea. We've had, you know, I do a security show with a guy named Steve Gibson. He concurs. I know Bruce Schneier concurs. He's another security expert. I'm pretty sure Brian Krebs doesn't use an antivirus. But that's a good idea. But I'm not sure I'd want to get somebody on to argue in favor of antivirus. So if you don't mind, if I just get a bunch of security guys, would that be sufficient?
Yeah, I think it would. I mean, you don't have to have the guy from Norton.
I don't want to get the guy from Norton on, because what he's going to say is, yeah, you need one because otherwise I'm out of work.
Well, that's so true, and that would be that. And we don't need that. But you got to admit that if you're basically old and decrepit, and I'm old and decrepit, we've lived with an antivirus program for so long, it's like the gospel. You put an antivirus program on all your computers. And we're so used to using something like Norton, because at one point in time, they were considered the gold standard.
Yeah, I've made arguments, and I'm sure you've heard them, why an antivirus is a bad idea.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, if you can't control them, they can't write them fast enough. Ransomware, obviously, now is a bigger problem, and nobody has figured a way to prevent that except, you know, following good procedure.
My chief arguments, I'll tell you my chief arguments. Mm-hmm. A, it doesn't fully protect you.
Yeah, that's a big one.
And as a result, you get a sense of false confidence. B, in many cases, and I can cite at least half a dozen cases, antiviruses from major companies have become vectors for infection, because an antivirus, in order to work, has to hook itself so deeply into your operating system that it, if it's not fully secure, can become, in effect, a host. So Norton is one of them, by the way. McAfee, There's one we advertised, I've stopped advertising, called Webroot, that decided at one point that all of the Windows systems files were malware and deleted them, causing people to lose access to their computers. I mean, I can go on and on and on. Having an antivirus does not improve security, and in many cases can hurt security. So those are my chief arguments.
And they're solid and good arguments. And if logically speaking, that should move everybody off antivirus programs.
It's not compelling to you, I guess.
No. I'm going to do exactly what you said, but it just occurred to me that what is also happening.
Yeah.
As an avid reader of, you know...
Times change. You know, I've recommended things I no longer recommend. I do that all the time because times change.
Exactly. And I will be doing that in the near future. I just thought it would be a great idea to get... Because when you went off on that, believe me.
Yeah. Well, and remember, I am saying not use an antivirus, but what you have with Defender is all you need.
And I'm going to buy into that, and Norton is going to go off all of
And the other reason is purely empirical from my years of doing this show. As often as not, people's computer issues are often tied to security software. It can sometimes keep them from getting on the internet. It can cause all these issues.
Oh, I know it's causing the current problem I'm having.
For all you know, it is. I mean, time and time again, I've had people call with weird issues. A lot of them just, I can't get on the internet. And the answer has been, turn off your security software. Did that work? Yeah. So that's the problem, is that an antivirus, it's not fully their fault. It's very difficult to do what they're doing because you also have to let the user do what the user wants to do.
No, that's the truth.
And so there's this fine line between being too aggressive and keeping the user from doing stuff and not aggressive enough and keeping the bad guys, letting the bad guys in. And
if you feel comfortable that Defender will do the job on standard virus issues, I'm game.
Yes.
Norton's going off
it will.
All of these.
Doesn't mean that you get to turn off the, you know, your security consciousness.
No, in fact,
more so. And then part of the reason I say this is, well, now you can't depend on this antivirus protecting you. So you've got to be very careful. You've got to really pay attention.